It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie's here, Alex Lindsay, and filling in for Andy Iannocco, the great Don McAllister. Yes, we're waiting for our Apple Watches. We'll talk about what to expect when yours arrives this Friday, or maybe even whether yours arrives this Friday. And don't you try to return that edition watch without special inspections. No shaving the gold off. Apple's going to be a little bit strict on that one. There's news, too, from other areas of the Apple universe. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 451, recorded Tuesday, April 21st, 2015. Yoga pants for your wrist. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Trunk Club. Have the wardrobe you've always dreamed of handpicked by your own personal stylist. Go to trunkclub.com/twit and join Trunk Club today for free. And by SmartThings. SmartThings lets you monitor, control, and automate your home from wherever you are using your smartphone. Right now, SmartThings is offering Mac Break Weekly listeners 10% off any home security or solution kit and get free shipping in the U.S. when you go to smartthings.com/twit. And don't forget to use the offer code TWIT at checkout. And by lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit lynda.com/macbreak. That's lynda.com/macbreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we break weekly about Macs or something. I don't know. Andy Iannocco not with us. He's in Yosemite, where limited bandwidth is keeping him from the internet. He's at the Cocoa Conference, the Yosemite Cocoa Conference. But I love it. Don McAllister filling in on monitor number one. Great to see you.
I can't fill in for Andy. No one can fill in for Andy. I'm just here as a guest, that's all. No, thanks for inviting me.
Screencasts online.
Indeed.
Course.com. Don is coming to us from Liverpool.
And we've deviated from our matching appearance since the last appearance because your hair has grown rapidly. I can't believe it.
Do you find that depressing?
It is a little bit. You know, it must be sleeping in the grow bag.
I'm relieved. Somebody told me, I don't know if they were punking me or not, but sometimes when you shave your head, they said it never grows back. And I...
Well, wow.
They scared me, but it did grow back. And it's grown back. It's almost now to the normal length. In fact, I actually have on my to-do list to make an appointment to get a haircut.
Oh, go on. Rub it in.
I'm sorry.
For charity.
I'm sorry. Good to see you, though. Also with us today, Mr. Alex Lindsay. Where are you calling us from?
Coming in from Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, PA. He's in Johnny Ive's white room. Actually, it's more of an ivory today.
Yeah, a little ivory today, yes.
And, of course, from Montreal, Canada, and iMore.com, Renee Ritchie. Great to see you.
Salut, Leo. Ça va bien?
What?
How are you, Leo?
What? Did my ears just go out, or did you speak to me in some sort of Star Wars language?
The language of your people.
Have you been watching Star Wars? Did you watch all six movies back to back?
All three movies, the unmolested versions, yes.
Now we know where you stand. I never realized that I think we talked about this last. I wasn't here last week. By the way, thank you, Andy, for doing the hosting chores for me. So maybe we didn't talk about it, but. This whole thing about going back to the original and is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
But so you only accept the episodes 4 through 6 as the canonical Star
Wars.
Well,
the other ones are just different. I just classify them as something different. They have a different purpose. They have different sort of they're different.
The Jar Jar era, we call it.
Yes.
Of course, that's the one that Alex Lindsay worked on. I just want to point out excellent specular highlights.
Yes.
On Princess Amidala's starship.
The chrome ship is peerless.
Yeah, see, there. That's all I need. The queen ship was beautiful. That's all I need. You know, the rest of it, you know.
Are you amazed, Alex, by the lengths to which these fans go to create the canonical versions? This is the video that he put up on YouTube.
I don't... you know, there's been people re-edit and edit, and there's been a couple different edits of some of the a variety of these, and I'm not that surprised. And people make their own Star Wars movies.
Fan fiction. But the point here, and I think actually, if you look at this video, it's pretty well taken. Is that the Blu-ray, which is what we're getting, I believe, in the digital versions, really the color correction was terrible. I mean, look at how the blue, the red, magenta hues the cast, and then the what is it called? The despecialized edition.
Yeah, that's what we're looking
which
at.
Which is
right
an attempt to get back to the original theatrical 1977 release. And the guy's using so many interesting techniques. Somebody told me he got a job out of this,
right?
Because he's so good. He's doing rotoscoping at the Mos Eisley. Bar scene, you know, as they go into the bar, there's a pathetic CGI animal.
The real question is, how do you get back to you know, the fact that Han shot first? I mean,
that's what they're trying to do. So they're using the 77. There isn't a print. Lucas has kept the prints out of circulation, but there are
laser disc, right?
There's a laser disc, which I own. I didn't realize. Yeah. Look at the differences. There's some huge differences. So this is actually fun to watch, the despecialized.
If you watch the Blu-ray versions, the original special effects hold up really well, but the CGI they added looks terrible now. It looks like Doom from the 1980s.
Right, because it was done in the 1980s, or was it the 90s?
Well, it depends on the which CGI. I think that the space shots will actually look fairly good.
Yes, the cleanups will look good, but the animals look horrible.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was still kind of a work in progress on some of those. You know, those were all done in the late 90s. And, you know, I think that this was pre-Hobbit, a lot of those things. You know, I think that the stuff that what I noticed a lot, and of course the stuff that I didn't do, but I definitely saw a lot of it getting built, was, you know, a lot of the space shots. And I thought those, if you look at the dynamism of a lot of the moves and shots and everything else, it was much more impressive than the original. The problem you really got into with, just to get a little geeky for a second, the problem you get into with the original TIE fighters and X-Wings was that those would be, three of those guys flying would be literally 14 passes of film that they would go through to comp it together, to pull it all together. And every time you did that, you would scratch it. So if you only got one or two tries before you had to start over again, and like literally reshoot everything all over again. And so you get to a point where the scratches are worse than the actual effect. And so when we got back to digital, you know, it allowed you to do things over and over and over again. And so I think that a lot of those kinds of the hard surface effects, I think in the re-releases were, you know, the stuff like the ships here, I think were very impressive. I think that the characters, we're still a little challenged because I think it was still a work in progress.
Have you seen the new robot, though, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Based on
when they said it was physical, when the trailer came out, they said it was physical, and I was like, there is
no way, man.
What, you know? And I guess the one that was done actually for the movie was a bit more of a prop, you know, that was rotoed out, you know, so it wasn't what we have now seen at Celebration, which is kind of running on its own. It was still a bit of a prop that they had to fix up, but
they actually have a patent for BB-8, which I think is hysterical.
Yeah.
Sphero. Mm-hmm. We know Sphero because we saw them at Macworld. They make a really interesting thing. So I've talked to Father Robert, who I believe is going to build this for, and maybe we can enlist you, Alex, because he says he can build the mechanics of it easily, but it's the paint job he can't do. So maybe we can enlist, you.
I have the perfect people for that.
Yeah, I figured you would.
Yeah, so
because it has to not only be painted but distressed.
No. What you want is to get guys that actually worked, you know, on the film. So,
what this is, apparently, I'm told by Robert. Looking at the patent, they figured out the big ball, the bottom of BB-8 is independent, rolls, and like a Segway, balances and is controlled. And then it has
it's a giant Sphero, isn't it? I mean, it's a giant
Sphero.
Yeah.
And then within it, and Sphero was this cool thing. Now, I think I have one. We have to find our Spheros. And then within it, he believes there's a rod, a magnetic rod that doesn't this is what's interesting. That top part is completely independent. You could pull it off. It's not attached in any way.
It must be levitating
it's by magnetic. Or yeah. There's a magnetic rod in the bottom, larger ball, that the magnets in the top part position center themselves over. So when you control the bottom ball, you also control, you see that, the independently, the position of the top piece. The top piece obviously has to also spin. I think that's controlled by the top.
Amazing. It's magical.
It is. It's a really wonderful effect.
And they're going to sell it as a toy.
Yeah.
Whoa. Like that.
Oh, yeah.
We live in wonderful times. Amazing.
All I can say is that I want that. And I think about everybody who's seen it is going to have if it works at all, if it gets reviews that it worked at all, everyone's going to have one.
Well,
so
this is footage maybe you haven't seen from the Star Wars conference, recent footage like a couple of days ago, where it comes out, it says hi, it rolls around, R2-D2's there, and it's real. It's not fake. So magical. What I love about this is that J.J. Abrams, who could easily have CGI'd this or puppetried this, made it. That's a good sign. I know people are worried about
it's like a lot of the sets, though. Some of the images that have been released from the sets, they actually built the built some of the craft, and
that's been the case. I think that they might have gone a little overboard on some of the stuff with the other episodes, but you know, there were some pretty big sets built for prequels. I mean, you know, so that's that you do want to create that scale. It's very hard to do that in CG when there it gets too big. A lot of times there's set extensions,
Yeah, they do painted plates for the extra stuff. But they're shooting these at the Ealing Studios. Where there's a lot. These are big, giant sound stages.
It's like a MagSafe head.
Yeah. It's a MagSafe head.
This is so awesome. That's all I got to say.
By the way, we can confirm that the new MagSafe adapter on the new Mac PowerBook 13 is much sturdier. The magnet is like much... You have to work at it to get it off. So good news. Andy will be happy about that.
The magnets on some of the watch straps are incredibly strong.
You've been now to the Apple store. You've watched. I've seen videos and photos from you and Serenity trying them on and everything.
Yeah.
Are you excited?
Yeah. I mean, I've gone several times now. I went to the Palo Alto debut for the try-ons, and they had...
I can't believe you came down. In fact, I saw the picture. We talked about this. Of you and Dalrymple talking to Tim, just standing there like regular guys talking to Tim Cook.
I wasn't expecting that. I was talking to Jim, and then Tim came in from the back of the store and then said, hi, Jim. Hi, Renee. And
he knew you?
What we ordered.
He didn't have to be introduced?
I mean, he has PR people, so I don't know. He's probably briefed. He might have a little
microphone. To your left, he said, Renee Ritchie, he's iMore.com.
Or his Apple Watch might be telling him. Like, it just taps out the person's name on his wrist.
To the right, it's Mr. Yep, Jim Dalrymple. He's at the
Jim
loop.
Jim is hard to miss, though, in Jim's
defense. Yeah, Jim's very distinctive. Wow, I mean, that was pretty neat. That must have been really awesome. Did you actually interview him at all, or just kind of...
We just spoke for a few minutes. He was saying how much he loved like using it for sports and athletics, the same kind of things he said before, but he's very gracious. I mean, he comes off as incredibly passionate and sincere, which is the same way it comes off on his talks.
Yep. It's kind of neat because, I mean, he has his talking points, but and I don't think he's an actor, so that gives me some sense that he's genuine in his approbation. Now,
and it wasn't just us. He went around and spoke to customers at the store as well. He took about half an hour.
Steve used to do that. That was his store, the Palo Alto store. He used to do that. Loved doing that. And I think Tim knows that, and this is kind of as much an homage to Steve as anything else. Steve would have loved to have been there for that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So I'm a little concerned. Friday, April 24th, we're recording this on April 21st, so Friday, 3 days away, 4 days away. Usually by now, I would have had a happy-go-lucky text message from Apple saying, good news, your watch is on its way. I haven't.
Nail biter.
You said Serenity has?
Serenity got, a couple people in the U.S. who ordered the aluminum ones who had April 24th as their early shipment date have been getting. I don't know if they've got actual notifications, but their status has changed on the online ordering.
Okay, mine isn't. I'm looking. Now, did everybody get April 24th through May 8th? That was the...
Mm-hmm.
So just because
if you ordered the aluminum.
Only those that ordered in the very, very first few minutes of the ordering process. It rapidly changed to like 4 to 6 weeks on most models.
Oh, yeah. No, but I ordered in the first few minutes. A little 12:10, I think. What time was
it?
So that's probably too late. But anyway, it says delivers 4:24 to 5:08, but it also says processing items. Mm-hmm. So...
I ordered stainless steel, and I ordered at 12:01, and it said between mid-May and late May.
Wow. So I was lucky. Well, you know what? That's what it said to mine, too, on the 42-millimeter, but the 38-millimeter. I'm going to get the little one. It's actually Lisa's. She's going to let me use it until the bigger one comes a few weeks later. So
mine's the 42 stainless steel with the Milanese loop. And
me, too.
That's still down for Friday till the week after.
They're drop shipping from China as usual?
They're staging in the U.S., I believe. I think they moved a bunch of them to the U.S. I think Mac Rumors wrote about that. They had a source that said a bunch of them had been moved to the U.S. to get ready for the shipping for Friday.
So, chat room, I got a ship notification for my watch charger. It'll arrive tomorrow. My card, Kalen says, my card has been charged. The status has changed. Tripod says, I got a FedEx tracking number for Friday. Tripod, what does it say is the origination of that? Because usually it'll say Shenzhen, China. But so this might confirm that story that they are in fact staging from the U.S. and would reassure me, because if they're staging from the U.S., they could reasonably...
I think it still says China, because they've done that before and it still said country of origin on the shipment. Oh, and if you paid with Apple Pay, some people have gotten the Apple Pay billing and has gone through.
Oh, I should check. How do you keep a moron in suspense? I'll tell you how. Right after this. No, I'm just kidding. They're keeping me in suspense. So none of you, I just want to check.
Nope. July.
What's it going to be in the UK? Is it different in the UK?
Well, as far as I know, no one in the UK has had a shipping notice as yet. But on Twitter, people have said there's a rumor that possibly they go out tomorrow. Also had another guy on Twitter say that in Australia, they get the shipping notices like the day before. So there's still hope. But it depends where they're coming from, I suppose. If they were coming from China to the UK, it's going to take ages. But if they have got some here, hopefully they could actually ship them out in a couple of days.
Right.
We'll soon find out.
It's the thing with the watch is that we waited for one event, then we waited for the second event, then we waited for the try-ons. Now we're waiting for the shipment and the delayed shipment.
Beyoncé got hers. In fact, she got one that no one else has. This is a gold link band. Here she is in her private plane. She gets an exit row every time. And there's the that's pretty.
I wasn't taken with a gold, but with a gold strap, now I might be interested then. But I'm not interested, but if you know what I mean.
Well, let me think how much that must have cost. Hey, Don, if you could reconnect, I think we're getting a lot of noise out of your connection.
Wow. Yeah, that's one of the bands they haven't announced publicly yet. There was a few of them. They've shown off now, I think, a red one, a yellow one, a dark blue one, a gold one that are just not publicly available, but they're giving out to.
And this is, I think, something you get from some of the watch designers and Angela Ahrens and so on and so forth, of the kind of the classic fashion rollout, which is that we're going to show you things that you can't even own right now. And, of course, you're going to want it, and then you're going to spend $30,000 on it or whatever. I mean, this is we've done some streams for fashion shows, and you definitely see this kind of buildup of that process. So it's very, very classic, more fashion industry than tech industry.
Tripod says that his... went through Canada first. That's got to really annoy
Renee.
You're
welcome. Well, I ordered the black stainless steel, and I knew going in that one was not going to be available right away. But it reminds me of that story when you look at Beyonce's watch. There's that story that, everyone drinks the same Coke, from the janitor to the president of the United States. It's all the same Coke. It's just the glass that you drink it in that varies.
The can.
And these are all the same Apple watches. Yeah, these are all the same Apple watches. It's just mine is going to be, in aluminum or stainless steel. Someone else's is going to be in a lot of gold.
Yeah. God, I just, I feel bad being, wanting it and worrying about it. It's like, come on. There's so many more important things in the world than that. Let me make that bigger here. And come on, Beyonce, really? Now, the interesting thing, Beyonce, of course, and Jay-Z, her husband, are publicly announced supporters of Jay-Z's record, or not exactly record label, streaming music service Tidal. And I got to think that Apple's sending out these really extra special ones to woo these artists over to Beats.
I don't know if it's wooing. I think they're looking directly at just influence, seeing these great, cool artists wearing the really high end watch. I don't think the marketing is connected to Beats. I think they're just really, they want the cool kids to be wearing it.
By the way, Beyonce is in fact not drinking the same can of Coke as you and me. She's drinking the same can of Canada Dry ginger ale.
Oh,
just,
good take.
Just so you know.
Karl Lagerfeld had the gold watch with the gold link bracelet as well. And there was a picture of it, but it was still on the setup screen. So it looked like he hadn't even paired it yet, but he was still wearing it.
Somebody come here and pair it for me. I don't know what to do.
Have you seen the diamond encrusted one?
No.
There's one that they've already started talking about. I guess they're going to do as soon as it's released. It's the gold watch, and then it's diamond encrusted all the way around. And evidently, I think the street price is $117,000. Same watch, same glass, but
I'm sticking with my good old Republican cloth watch, the Moto 360. I'm going to be a man of the people.
The plebeians.
Although Google's clearly stung a little bit by the fact that the Apple Watch, in its first weekend, outsold all the Android Wear watches ever.
And I think that what's interesting about this is also at a price that was two or three times what they were selling it at. I mean, that's the real insult, is that you're really talking about something that was sold that you know, everyone's worked really hemmed and hawed. Is it 200? Is it 300? And Apple said, no, it'll be like 600 average.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, that's what we can, and we can sell all in a day what you sold over a year at three times the cost. It's quite a juggernaut.
Google has announced that. We don't know. It's not clear, although some have said the current watches will be upgradable. Others have said that's not true. That they're going to support Wi-Fi just as the Apple Watch does. They're going to take it one better, though. As long as your watch is online and your phone is online, even if they're not in the same locale or the same network, they will talk to one another. Nice. So that, now I don't know when that's coming, but that's an interesting
addition. I have a Pebble, and I've used a Moto, and I've used one of the Samsungs. And when you actually go and pick up an Apple Watch, the build quality is they're not comparable. Like, the other ones look nice when you just are looking at them, but the build quality of the Apple Watch, the materials, the finish, all the stuff that Apple's famous for, it's a huge difference.
Yes.
I think the haptics things as well, is that fairly unique for the Apple Watch? Because I've only actually used the Pebble, and that sort of vibrates, but I think the ceramic back with the sensors and this taptic touch that they're going to have, I think that's going to be interesting to see how people actually either enjoy or dislike that particular aspect.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting, isn't it?
Mm.
Well, I mean, I want to try it. I'm ready. I've got my iPhone all polished up. I just want the tracking.
And put the camera at your watch and pair it up.
And I do think that this is going to be good for Android. I think that, you know, there's a lot that Android's going, even though that they've been stung by this a little bit, I think that there's a lot of advantages, because there are going to be a lot of people that don't want to spend $500 on a watch. And they're going to get excited, and we're going to see they're going to see the possibilities. And of course, there'll be a bunch of Android developers that develop something very similar, but you can do it for a lot less money.
It has to be really frustrating, though. You know, I mean, they do everything you can for Samsung too. And Apple just waltzes in and says, yeah, we'll take it from here.
Well, the interesting thing, though, is that they're going to gain critical mass very, very quickly. And I really see, like, the second phase of the Apple Watch being, you know, once us early adopters get them and we start to use them, and then the developers start to tweak the applications because people are using them in real life. And then, you know, third-party manufacturers start to realize that there's this huge critical mass of Apple Watch users who have, you know, this physical I think the physical interaction is going to be the big thing that will finally sell it to the masses. When people start seeing people pay for things with their watch, and when they see people start opening doors with their watch and, you know, interacting with the car and stuff like that, I do think Apple will have the critical mass to actually sort of generate third parties to get more involved and to start to create a physical infrastructure that actually interworks with the Apple Watch. And at that point, then I think it will really take off.
I thought it was interesting that Microsoft, I guess, has made it available. PowerPoint is you're now going to be able to advance slides on your watch.
You know, there you go. Apple That's watch. What a watch is for.
No, but you can see a lot of guys that present. Yeah. You present a lot, and I present a lot of slides. And I don't know if you present a lot of slides, but I present a lot of slides. And I thought, oh, that would be really nice not to have something that I'm constantly, you know, one of these, you know, that I'm constantly setting down somewhere or trying to figure it out, of just being able to tap my watch while I'm talking.
Do you think the Apple Watch will follow the same path that the iPod followed, where you have the first edition and then you start doing colored editions? Maybe there'll be a Swatch-priced Apple Watch and that
kind of
thing.
Just a band with no watch, but I don't know if Apple's really interested in that. Almost like the iPod Shuffle version where there's no screen, but I don't know how much interest they have.
What would that do? You'd have
they could do the fitness tracking things the way that sort of the iPod Shuffle did a very specific subsection of iPod functionality. But I don't know what their interest level is in that, because since the iPod, they've been more about making computers more personal, not necessarily just doing devices.
I think, go ahead.
I was just going to say, on this Instagram photo of Karl Lagerfeld's watch that has not been set up, just cracks me up.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, well, I don't know how to use this, but I'm going to wear it because it.
That's a true fashion statement, then, isn't it?
That is. I can afford a $50,000 watch that I don't know how to use.
He probably didn't use a watch before that. Of course, they're probably all ornamentation for him anyway.
Yeah. And then, and you mentioned Tim. Here's the picture of Tim's. Oops, sorry. You just got the red. Tim's with the red crown.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. He's wearing it.
Probably just has a prototype.
He's wearing the white fluoro elastomer. Maybe the red crown is like the ones that they seated employees.
Aren't they the ones that match the gold edition with the red band?
I think there is a red crown, isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just wearing the wrong band.
Yeah. Well, he has a stainless steel watch. He's an operations guy. He's very practical.
He doesn't have a gold one. You know, I think that's the right message to send. Let's not.
We talked about this before, where it's like Jeff Williams, who's the vice president of operations, drives a 10-year-old Toyota or Honda or something. They have very different priorities.
The Apple Watch Nano. I like that idea. The shuffle.
Now, it's much cheaper now with analog hands.
Yeah, an analog watch. Gruber has an interesting article on Daring Fireball. He talks about discovering FacerRepo.com. Which is, and I've been using it for a long time, which is the place where you can get custom watch faces for Android Wear. And there's some very cool ones, although he mocks it and writes an apologia for Apple and why Apple will never offer custom faces. One reason, good reason, because of the OLED screen on the watch, you kind of want to choose faces that promote battery life. In other words, with a lot of black. And he says there is a custom design in a sense because the Mickey face must have been designed in conjunction with Disney.
Licensed, yeah.
But he says the 10 different faces, which are almost, not quite, but almost infinitely customizable with what Apple calls complications, are likely going to be that way. He says there's no way to set up a watch face that's ugly or doesn't look very Apple Watchy. And I have to say, one of the things about Facer Repo is you can get a very ugly
yeah.
face for your Android Wear watch if you wish. he says, I don't see that. That's by design. I don't see that changing. He quotes Andy saying in a tweet, like, what if Apple said, we don't trust you to choose well-designed iPhone wallpaper? And Gruber points out, we don't have to imagine that. Until iOS 4 in 2010, you couldn't choose the wallpaper on your iPhone.
That, I think, is the most apt part of that, because originally they just couldn't composite it properly. It was too much for the phone and the processors back then. And when they could properly composite the layers, they let you do it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's a lot of arguments about the watch faces right now, but there's a couple things to remember. One, there's no native apps yet, and developers can't make watch faces without native apps. Trying to shoot a watch face as a series of PNG images over Bluetooth is not going to be successful for anyone. So it's until there's native code running on the phone, having a discussion about watch faces is just incredibly premature. But other than that, they've already ditched the photos and the time lapse watch face because of power reasons. Because anytime you have a pixel lit up on OLED, it uses power, and a photo watch face lights up every pixel, unlike the very linear line art style watch faces they're doing there. The culture thing is harder, though, because, you know, Apple does allow custom keyboards now, which a lot of us thought they might never do, and there's a custom keyboard extension. So maybe one day there'll be a custom watch face extension. I don't know. I don't think there will be, but it's always possible, and it's hard to speak in absolutes. But going back to just the watch face things, not having it on the first version of the shipping product, I think that's a given. It's just absolutely a given at this point.
You know who will get a watch sooner than later? Developers. Apple, according to Mac Rumors, Apple has started sending out emails to iOS developers offering them a chance to purchase a 42-millimeter Sport with a blue band with a guaranteed shipment of April 28th in order for them to start developing. So it's not guaranteed. They say random selection quantities are limited. But if you're a developer, look for that email. You have till Thursday to let them know that you want it.
Well, that must be US only, because I don't think I received that email.
Yeah, this. Are you a developer?
I'm registered as a developer, yeah. Well,
I guess
yeah,
I am too, aren't I?
I've got apps.
Yeah, I didn't get it either.
Yeah. Mm. Maybe you have to actually really be a developer. You have to have at least two apps in the App Store to get this email. I don't know.
We have six, I think, and we didn't get one.
Oh, well, that sucks. Yeah. Check your spam folder.
Renee, but Tim knows you by first name, so you should be okay.
Gruber's laughing at the heavily skeuomorphic watch faces on face repo, including this one of the Android. This is, you could have this on your Android Wear, Android robot urinating on a gold Apple. I might download that right now. Just to make people angry.
One of the things also is police, because Apple takes editorial responsibility for their content, and right. Policing IP on this stuff is, especially when you're a company that gets as much scrutiny as Apple, is non-trivial.
Yeah, and this is actually a big issue for Google, because a lot of the watches are copyright and trademark violations. There's Tag Heuer watches, watch faces. There's Patek Philippe. There's a lot of brand names in face repo. And
these things are often more nuanced than internet anger allows for.
Yes. Gosh darn you, internet anger.
Didn't Apple have to settle with the Switch clock people? Mm-hmm.
They outright stole that watch face from the Swiss railway folks. That was just,
they paid for it and then they stopped using it immediately. Afterwards.
Yeah, that was absolute just outright thievery. let's see. A few people in the chat room I'm noticing are saying they have received notifications. In fact, some have gone in and checked just because we've been talking about it. Webmaster 305 says, yes, my Apple Watch order was updated, preparing for shipment. So check your Apple Store page and see what's going on. 9to5 Mac, good news, Alex, says Keynote has been updated for a watch-based remote.
Yep.
So it's not just PowerPoint. Good news.
Exactly. As soon as you said it, I was just thinking all the things that you do when you're presenting or doing a class or whatever,
being able
to drive it to your watch. It's gonna be exciting. Just it stays with you, you know. Now you just need mute and unmute.
So the PowerPoint for iPhone is now Apple Watch. There are a number of updated apps coming all the time. What else have you guys seen updated to support the watch?
They showed off Twitterific, I think, yesterday.
Nice. So tweets would go to the watch.
Yeah. And the Twitter app has been updated.
Yeah, the Apple Remote as well for your Apple TV.
That's awesome.
Fantastic. Because I lose those all the time. And it's such a pain to take your phone out and get the application. And although the app does work fine, but to have it just on your wrist all the time would be great.
That's built in.
And so if you have an Apple Watch and you have these apps on your iPhone, that's all you need to worry about. Once you pair the watch, it'll automatically update it.
The Apple Watch companion app, the one that runs on your iPhone, has a second tab that says store on it. And come Friday, that'll be lit up and you'll see a bunch of apps in there. And then that you'll be able to take the apps that are listed there and transfer their WatchKit extension to your phone.
I don't open this app anymore because it's just taunting me. Good morning. If you have an Apple Watch, you can pair it with your iPhone here.
Yeah.
Don't taunt me like that.
Did I read there was a limit to the number of third-party apps you could actually have on the watch?
Well, maybe. I mean, there's limited memory, right? I mean,
it's got 8 gigabytes, and I think 2 gigabytes is reserved for music, a 0.5 gigabyte for images, and the rest for the system and for apps.
By the way, if you want to watch the videos, looks like they're all done now. The how-to videos have been updated and are available not only, of course, at Apple.com, but on the Watch app itself on your iPhone. So you can watch all the videos they've made now. Let's see. Health and fitness, digital touch. Faces message. Oh, they're not done. There's still some unfinished ones, aren't there? Boy, come on, Apple. What's holding up? What's holding you up?
Johnny has to approve each one, Leo.
It's my guess that there are people we know who are working on these videos right now. In fact, I more than a guess. And I'm not talking about you, Alex Lindsay. So yeah, they've been shooting these. I've been told they've been shooting these in a warehouse in the Bay Area for some time now. And can you imagine? It must be that white room warehouse where they light everything up, and the amount of trouble doing something like that must be.
Probably see the heat pattern from orbit.
Yeah. So still to come, Apple Pay, Activity, and Workout, but they have added phone calls, Siri, Maps, and Music, and I think. As we sit here waiting for our text message, you got something to do. You can watch these videos. I found it very helpful to actually kind of look at the videos so that I understand how it all is going to work.
I think the goal is that you're an expert in the watch by the time the watch arrives.
Right.
You know, that's the key to the operation.
Right. All right. Have we exhausted the topic for today? Because you know next week all we're going to be doing is going, I'm hoping all we're going to be doing is. So you won't have one, Renee.
Yeah.
So you won't be going. Alex, no, you won't have one.
July.
Maybe you and I will have one, Don. We just don't know yet.
Yeah. Well, hopefully by this time next week, even if it doesn't arrive on the 24th, that's still a couple of days after possibly, but fingers crossed.
We'll do a unboxing the minute mine gets here. It's shipping to the studio. And my hope was to be able to do that live on Before You Buy this Friday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC. So watch BYB. If I get it, we'll unbox it. Nice. The stainless steel, just like you, the stainless steel with a Milanese loop. We have good taste.
Good taste. That's right. Actually, it was one of those last minute things though, because I was going to go with the black sports, and then like literally the day before, because I was undecided right the way through, and then so like 12 hours before ordering, said no, I'll go with the stainless steel and Milanese loop. Sight unseen.
Speaking of Milanese, Milan Design Week, Milano, Italia Design Week. Is going on, and Johnny Ive is there hanging with Carl and the gang.
Gianni.
Hey, Johnny Ive, what do you got for us? Some beautiful sport band of colors.
Bellissimo.
A showcase at the Milan Salone del Mobile Design Fair in Italia, which, by the way, 9 to 5 Mac typos to Italy. Attended by Apple executives, including Phil Schiller, Mark Newsom, and, of course, Sir Johnny Ive. And they showed off. Are these new, these bands, or is it just...
They're not publicly available or previously unannounced. I don't know what the right term is, but, yeah, there's Yellow and Red and Midnight Blue.
And here is Mark Newsom. He's wearing a black sport band. We don't have a black sport, but Newsom is, of course, a very famous designer, friend of Johnny Ives, who has joined Apple last year. Salone
del
Mobile.
And his watches that he designed are very similar in many ways to what the Apple Watch turned out to be.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So he should
Especially the straps.
He should get some credit. He's strap man. They call him the strap man in Cupertino. This is the best picture we have here of a rack of straps. Looks like purple. Bright red, a nice bright red. I like that.
I'm waiting for the Samuel Jackson Instagram with his purple Apple Watch.
Yeah, he should have a purple one. You could take the red watch or the blue watch.
Well, the red strap mustn't be too far away because it'll be a product red strap, won't it?
Red strap. I like it.
Yeah, so I would imagine we'll see that in the not-too-distant future.
And apparently... People were squeeing over this, Apple's innovative new UK plug design.
Nice.
Actually, that's pretty cool. So it's flat in your pocket. Because the UK plugs, they have big, heavy prongs.
They're quite bulky, but they're extremely well designed for safety. If you notice on the prong sticking out, you've got insulation and the metal tips. And then the earth is actually longer. And that in a UK plug, that actually... opens a gate so that the live and the neutral can actually go in. So it's extremely well designed, but it is very bulky. I've seen another one. There's another travel plug which is similar to this, but like a fold, sort of twist and fold one, which has been out like a USB adapter with the UK prongs. I mean, that's the first charger from a big, presumably if it is the Apple charger, that's the first time I've seen that sort of design from a major manufacturer.
I like it.
It's good.
I think we should change all plug receptacles to duplicate the UK plug.
As a consumer, they drive me crazy because it's always like this huge thing that you have to carry around. Yeah. The only one worse than the UK is South Africa because it was like giant circular. But as a production person, I love UK plugs. I wish everything was UK. Oh, yeah. When you're putting together all your gear and you're putting it, it's like chunk, 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 chunk. Yeah. And you just know that there's no way that's coming out.
Well, those are metric chargers, right?
Yeah. Sorry? When I come over to the States, I always find that those little American flimsy two prong things, they just fall out the wall. You plug them in, and then if you put some weight on it, it just sort of droops down, or it drops out, or it sparks.
Yeah, that doesn't happen a lot in London, does it?
Sloppy plug.
You put
those
in,
fall out of the wall.
The thing is that if you took a UK plug and stuck it in, you could rappel off of that out the window if you needed to. I mean,
it's,
it would
a, it's
just
a
be
proper
like,
metric
just,
plug, Alex.
Yeah, exactly.
What in Canada, you're just the same as us, right, Dan?
Yeah, we have to be Leo, otherwise we couldn't use anything.
Right.
So at least the Europeans have the round pins, and they're a little bit more, you know, stable. But those flat pins...
Yeah, I don't like those either. I like the UK plug.
Ours are meant to support a cable industry, folks. What are your priorities here?
By the way, this picture comes from famed rugby player and captain-turned-cyclist Will Carling. And I guess he's received his watch, and unlike others, this guy, he knows his stuff. He took a picture of the plug.
I think he was answering some questions on Twitter, too. He was
neat.
Clued in.
That's pretty cool, isn't it? I like this red. Yeah. Although, according to those folks, those snarky folks at 9 to 5, Mr. Carling is wearing his bottom band upside down.
Dare he?
Mr. Carling, you're wearing... I can clearly see the medium-large sizing mark. This is red, navy, light pink, new bands, and purple's new too, isn't it? I haven't seen the purple before. Yeah. All right, I don't know what else is there to say about the watch, Renee. You got any other juicy tidbits before we move on?
It just feels like we were talking about it forever, Leo. I just wanted to arrive now.
I know.
So we can talk about it. Some
I
more.
Know. I'm done. I have actually some more. We actually want to talk about the estimates on sales because they vary quite wildly, and I'm curious what you guys think of those. Before we do that, though, let's talk about my clothes because you know what? It's not just Karl Lagerfeld and Will Carlin and Beyonce that are snazzy. Thanks to Trunk Club, I'm getting more snazzy. Look, guys, I know we all hate to shop except for gadgets and tools, but when it comes to clothes shopping, it's the worst. That's why I was so happy about Trunk Club. Gals have had solutions like this for years, but now, Trunk Club, guys, you can talk to your a personal stylist. Mine is Robin. You can't have her. I talked to Robin for about, I think about half an hour. She was very, it was fun. I was talking about my, you know, and I was, it's like talking to a doctor. You could say, yeah, I'm kind of fat. And she doesn't mock me. Yeah, a little chunky, thick around the middle. And we talked about sizes. Styles. I said, well, you know, I come from a preppy background. She said, we'll fix that. And so forth. And then she goes online and posts a page just for you with some suggestions. And it's like hot or not. You go through them and you say, I'll never wear that. Oh, yeah, I'll wear that. I like that. No. Then this is the best part. And by the way, at this point, you have paid zero, zip, zilch, nothing. A box comes, a trunk. My first trunk was actually a even bigger trunk. This is a medium size trunk, and in it are beautiful clothes. Now, you still have paid nothing for shipping, nothing for the clothes. You have 10 days to go through the trunk, look at all the things. Robin picked out some, I love the cable knit sweaters she picked out. This is something I probably would have never bought for myself, but it's so beautiful. It's kind of a pea coat, updated pea coat style, and I'm really excited about this. Unstructured, it's soft. I'm learning all these words like that. Shirts, pants, neckties, pocket squares, even shoes, all in your size. Actually, she sent two of these peacoats because she wasn't sure about the sizing exactly. You keep what you want and you send the rest back, 10 days to decide. And then and only then do you get charged and only for the stuff you kept. Ship it all back, you still pay nothing. And another thing, there's no monthly subscription, no monthly fees. Whenever, you know, you want more clothes, you call Robin or whoever your stylist is and say, it's time for another trunk, and she'll set it up for you. I love this. Trunk Club is a revelation. I've already had three trunks because I kind of fell in love with it. It's so much fun. Your own personal stylist, a real person who will pick based on your lifestyle, your preferences, whether it's bold, casual, business, formal, she'll get you something you like. Shirts, shoes, slacks, jeans, belts, jackets, really great brands. Once your trunk arrives, you keep what you like, you return the rest free of charge. So it's free to join, shipping, returns, free, no minimum purchase, no subscription. It's really simple. You just pay for what you keep. I love this idea. If you're busy or maybe you hate shopping like me, make it easy. Rely on your own personal stylist from Trunk Club. Go to trunkclub.com. twit to get started, to meet your stylist, and get your first trunk of fabulous clothes for free. trunkclub.com/twit. It's such a great idea.
I'm wearing just think if Facebook did Trunk Club. It would be the Zuckerberg model where you just get a t-shirt and a sweatshirt every month.
Yeah.
Like, here's a new one.
It's time to get out of the hoodie and the shower slippers and start wearing something nice. This is Trunk Club I'm wearing right now. It's beautiful. Marin I feel like I'm just, it's a new me. Thank you, Trunk Club. KGI. So I've seen estimates ranging from 1 million watches in the first weekend to a high, which comes from KGI, of 2.3 million Apple Watch pre-orders. KGI, and I don't know, I want to vet this with you guys. It says 85% sport, less than 1% edition. The run rate, 2 to 3 million per month. This is Ming Chi Kuo. Mm-hmm. Who is, I think, has a, Renee, is he has the most, a
yeah,
fairly
he's
pretty, good.
He's, yeah, I think he's the most reliable of the financial analysts. But I think also the million number was just U.S., and I think Michiko is doing international. But I'm not positive.
Well, this is, I mean, good Lord.
It's a lot of watch. And the edition is really low because I guess Apple keeps giving them away.
No, look, at that price, $10,000 and up, no, you know, 1%, that I think if you got 1%, you'd be happy of a 3 million.
There was a breakdown of how much money, based on these estimates, how much money Apple would make per collection. And the edition, I think, was still second only to the sport just because it's so much money per watch sold.
Yeah. So much markup, yeah. I thought that stainless steel, the middle one, would sell better. I mean, at this, it looks like it's around 14% or 15% of the total.
But it's a really expensive when you think about it. I mean,
it's around $600-$700.
It's like buying a computer. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, at that point, you know,
$600 to $1,500.
The one that I got and Don got was $650. I don't know what was it in the UK. $650 US dollars.
I can't remember now. I'll look it up.
Is there a big markup? Because they often do that. They do that to Canadians and Europeans.
Well, they add VAT. The VAT is included in the price. In the
yeah,
price.
Right. We add VAT. Yeah,
aren't in the US.
And the VAT's steep.
Mm-hmm. 20%.
Yeah.
Golly.
It's a lot. We have 15.5% here.
Chimney Christmas. But you guys get health care.
Ish.
The run rate of 2 or 3. Now, see, this is a really an interesting question because I do think that it you could make the case that, yeah, sure, it's going to sell really well at first. Huge pent-up demand. The most avid Apple aficionados, and there are certainly millions of those, will buy right away. But I think it's also conceivable that the sales could drop, maybe even precipitously in the subsequent months, as people get it and say, well, it's cool, but not great, or maybe not great at all. Or
I think it's insulated a little bit because Apple only counts the sale when it ships, I believe, and they won't be shipping until May, June, July. So several months to accrue to
good
accrue
point.
Sales.
Good point. So
maybe.
That's an excellent point.
I mean, the problem is that we're not going to find out what. Sorry, Alex.
All I'm going to say is I think that the proof is obviously going to be in the actual quality of the product. So that is going to be the thing that, you know, you can sell, I think Apple can sell 5 million, 6 million of these just from people who are excited about the possibility.
Yeah.
And then after that, it really depends on, you know, whether it's actually a utility to people's lives.
So this quarter will be great.
The summer.
It'll be the next quarter that'll be the test.
Right. And the good thing for them is they're going right into Christmas.
Jim Dobner had a good metric. He did a post on Loop where he said that he doesn't really care about sales numbers, about customer sat numbers. He just wants to know how many people are still wearing them a week later, a month later, 3 months later, mm-hmm. 6 months later.
Right. And that you can verify just by looking. Mm-hmm. Will I be wearing mine in September? Will you be wearing yours in September? I far prefer Android, as I've made very clear, I'm sorry, to as from a phone point of view. But will the watch be enough to keep me on iOS? I mean, I like iOS perfectly well. It's not like I loathe iOS. But I will miss some features of Android, I admit. Hey, I saw an interesting thing, and I didn't know this. Maybe, Alex, you knew it. The way Android's designed, there is a roughly guaranteed 10-millisecond audio latency. And maybe much more in Android. And that's one of the reasons you see so few music performance apps on Android tablets. You wouldn't. This is from superpowered.com. They call it Android's 10 millisecond problem. And I had not heard of this before, but it does explain something. I mean, they say it's like dragging the beat, like in Whiplash. Not my tempo. And so if you were trying to perform in a band with iOS devices and you're using Android, you'd be off about half a beat. Does that make sense?
I haven't heard that, but I can definitely see that would definitely be an issue. But you know, 10 milliseconds is very, very small amount of time. So, I mean, a frame of video is 30 milliseconds.
Right.
So this is a third of a frame. But in music, it would definitely, if you were trying to use it in performance.
Use it in live performance.
That'd be a huge issue.
And the latency might even be greater. That's, you know, that's kind of your base.
To be honest with you, I'd be surprised. I would think that even the iPhone would have 10 milliseconds of delay. So I'm kind of surprised that it's truly zero latency.
That's according to Superpowered, most Android apps have more than 100 milliseconds of audio output latency, and the round trip is 200 milliseconds, or a fifth of a second. That would be a fifth of a second.
That
would
is
be
significant in terms of musicianship and playing music.
And that's really like what you would expect from a telephone call or a GoToMeeting or anything like that. Those are about 200 milliseconds. If you're ever in the same room as someone you're talking to on the phone, you get kind of a sense of how long that round trip is. And that stays pretty constant across most devices.
It's one of the reasons why it's difficult to do these duets over the internet, you know, when you have, Tony Bennett in one studio and Lady Gaga across the country in another. It's hard to do that, but they have solved that. I mean, they've got, I think ISDN and other techniques have gotten latency down to 10 to 20
optical
milliseconds.
Optical fiber is really the way to do it. And even then, you're still losing, I think it's typically, well, what they'll tell you is about 5 milliseconds per 100 miles. I think there's ways to get it down to about 2 milliseconds per 100 miles, but it's still, you know, that's about the kind of latency you're going to see. So it is still challenging, though. We've done some stuff even over Hangouts that have been across actually Canada, not the United States, but
well, that's a lot more across in Canada than there is in the US.
Right. But what we didn't do, we kind of talked the folks we were working with out of was, trying to actually harmonize. That's really where things become,
ooh,
like if you're doing, so what you can do is send and receive. So have someone do something and then have them, you know, give a handoff and the other people pick it up. That you can do with, you know, a lot of latency. But the actual keeping things in harmony or keeping things to the beat is almost impossible virtually.
Right.
The one thing that I heard consistently from developers was that a lot of people underestimate the Cocoa Touch frameworks. For example, Apple has Core Audio and they have Accelerate, which is a lot of the math that a lot of music apps use, and they get all of that for free. So it really cuts down the amount of development work. And I don't want to name any names, but there are some apps that just don't exist on Android because they can't put in the effort to rebuild all that stuff from scratch. And the ones that do, it took them literally a year and a half, 2 years to rebuild that to a level that it matched what they got in iOS basically for free.
I've heard that many times from developers. Also, animation much easier on iOS. The tools and libraries you're provided with are much easier to use on it.
Well, the material design.
You guys, iOS developers, is that why you're nodding? Yeah. Okay, I got a couple of people in the studio going. Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm. So, you see, we're objective here. We cover it all. If there's something good, something bad, we'll talk about it. And my issue is just much more at a higher level of UI, but I think if I don't take my iPhone out of the pocket, if I like the UI on the watch, that may solve it all, right?
It's interesting that a couple of people who aren't sort of Apple aficionados that I've spoken to, who are interested in the watch, are interested for that very reason, that they want to, they have jobs where they can't easily take the phone out,
right,
and they would like access to the phone's features from the watch so they can just sort of glance at it and check things. And I was quite surprised, really, because there were two people that I thought probably, you know, it wasn't even on their radar, but they were, they're well up for it, yeah.
You know what I'm really interested in? They sent me a few, so I just kind of out of the blue, a thing called Sky Bell, which is a doorbell, and I actually installed it at home, that has a camera on it, and it's Wi-Fi enabled. So one of the problems we had is our doorbell's so funky. People ring the bell, and I don't hear it. We're busy. We're in the other room. So this will ring when you ring the doorbell, rings all my devices, Android and iOS, are all going off. And then you can press a button and talk back to the person at the door and see a picture, even if you're here, if I'm at work. But apparently they're going to have an Apple Watch interface for the iOS version, which means I'll finally be able to answer the door for my watch. Won't that be interesting?
Very Dick Tracy. Every kid's dream.
Isn't that a cool idea?
It'd be nice if they built a camera in as well.
You know, eventually someone
there is a camera. They can't see me, but I can see them. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. Not, it's $200 and it's a little wonky, because somebody called the radio show and said, I can't get it working. So I guess they heard that and they sent me some and I installed it and it works great. I can turn on the camera right now, actually, and see, you know, what's going on out my front door.
The angry mailman.
Yeah. Hey. Well, that's the funny thing, because FedEx and the mailman do ring the front door bell. And so I do get like a ding dong.
I know you're in there, Laporte.
I know you're in there. Let's see if I can see what's going on out front of my house. Nothing. Nothing right now. But there it is. And I can say, hey, what you doing? Hey, get away from there.
Poor cat.
Poor cat. Isn't that funny? That's the actual live picture from my front door. So that's kind of cool. And I love the idea that I could do that on my watch. The watch can't do like a live video feed though.
Bluetooth. They showed it at the event using, I forget the name of the app.
The garage door.
Yeah, the garage door.
Isn't that neat?
It's not live video. Only as far as I know, the native apps, like if you use the phone, there's a remote shutter for the phone where you can see through the viewfinder of your iPhone and then take pictures remotely with the watch. That's real-time video. What I think the third-party WatchKit extensions are doing is throwing PNG files at as high a frame rate as they can.
Oh, that's interesting. So low frame rate, but you at least see something. Yeah, I don't know what the frame rate is. Nobody's moving.
Which could be scary if it looks like a zombie coming at you.
Well, and I could take a picture of it if there's a zombie. I think we're really entering an interesting era of connectivity with this Internet of Things stuff. Anyway, this is called Skybell. It's a couple of $100. I'll do a full review at some point on Before You Buy. Did you talk last week about the memo, the Aaron's memo, saying we're not going to put watches in the store, so forget about it?
Yeah.
That seems sensible because there's so many SKUs on this. It's kind of an unusual product for Apple.
Well, I think if they had just an enormous supply and they had a really good idea of what the demand curve would be for each separate model, it would be easier for them to stock it. But this seems like the best of a strained supply constraint situation.
And then at some point, as she says, until June, but at some point, you're exactly right. They'll have enough supply and they'll have data points to know. You know, it's like McDonald's. How many Big Macs are you going to make? How many regulars are you going to make? You know after a while.
Well, apparently there was some concern that people would line up and they'd be spending like 6-8 hours in line and they'd get there and they'd say, I want the stainless steel Milanese.
Don't have it.
Sorry, all we have is the pink sport left. And then people would buy stuff they weren't happy with. And
that happened to me with the iPhone 6. I got the equivalent of the pink sport iPhone 6.
The other problem as well is if people turn up at the store to buy these things is that, you know, because it is a very personal thing and if people have it in their mind, right, I'm going to buy the 42 Milanese and they go in and they try it on and say, actually, no, can I try another one because I don't like this? So, you know, you end with people going through the entire range of straps and watches to actually buy it there. So I think that they've tackled it probably as best they could to, you know, do the pre-orders online and go in for an appointment. So I know people have actually gone in, tried it on and actually changed their mind and reordered it at that point. And it's
My mom did.
Easy
mom
to do that.
My mom switched to the bigger one.
Did she? Yeah, I'm afraid that the little one's going to be too little for me. So how many SKUs are there? There's in aluminum, there's just one, right? Bands.
Each strap is considered a separate SKU because you buy them as a paired unit.
Okay. Well, let's not. Okay, that's bad. So let's take the straps off. In the aluminum, there's 38 and 42. In the stainless, there's four because there's 38 and 42 for silver and black, right?
Yeah, same in aluminum because there's silver and there's also space gray.
Oh, there's space gray. Yeah. So there's 12 SKUs then because there's four in each. So there's 12 different kinds of watches and then a lot of different kinds of bands. So I can see how keeping that all stocked up would be difficult.
My mom did her try on last week, and she was really impressed with the accessibility of the straps because she's older now, and she says she has a lot of trouble with some jewelry putting the straps on and off. And she found a lot of the Apple bands, as soon as they told her how to use it, really easy and really accessible for her.
Which one did she like for accessibility?
She especially liked the loops. And I've made a joke that the loops are essentially the Lululemon pants of
that's why I bought them.
Yeah, absolutely. But even the bracelets, she had an easy time because the modern buckle, it looks like a buckle, but it's actually magnetic. It's two parts that magnetically adhere together, and that makes it really easy to put it together.
Okay. Apple has talked about the technology and functionality behind Apple's heart rate monitor. This is in a new support page at support.apple.com. It's HT204666. The mark of the watch. Your heart rate, what it means, and where on Apple Watch you'll find it. It describes how it measures it. Those are four little sensors on the back. We've probably all seen those. So it uses infrared light to measure your heart rate every 10 minutes. So it's not continuous. If the infrared system isn't providing an adequate reading, it switches to green LEDs. In addition, the heart rate sensor is designed to compensate for low signal levels by increasing both brightness and sampling rate. So you can see how it's going to be hard to say what your battery life is. If you have, thick skin, it might be worse battery life.
I think also when you're doing the workout app, it takes much more frequent readouts, sure. So it can give you more accurate.
The technique is something called photoplethysmography.
Say that 10 times.
Photoplethysmography. Blood is red. It reflects red light and absorbs green light. So the green LEDs paired with light-sensitive photodiodes, that's the other two dots, will detect the amount of blood flowing through your wrist at any given moment. So as your heart beats, blood flows, the green light absorption goes up, and then it goes down. Up, down, right? So by measuring the difference, it can actually count your heartbeats. By flashing the LED lights hundreds of times per second, it calculates the number of times the heart beats each minute, your heart rate. The fit is important, of course. If your Apple Watch doesn't stay in place or sensors aren't reading your heart rate, tighten the band a bit. It should be snug but comfortable. In other words, it needs to make contact with your skin, I think, there. A lot of people wear wristwatches a little loose so they kind of wobble. You may not like that.
But for sport activity, you're going to want to tighten it anyway.
Yeah, right.
Otherwise, it might annoy
exactly.
you.
I think but it was I like Joanna the idea Stern of it measuring it throughout the day, not just when I'm working out, but throughout the day. I love that idea. Wish it could do blood pressure throughout the day. Many factors can affect the performance of the heart rate sensor. Skin perfusion is one. A fancy way of describing how much blood flows through your skin. Apparently, skin perfusion varies considerably from person to person. And environment. If you're in the cold, the perfusion may be too low for the heart rate sensor to get a reading. So it's only going to work for you, Renee, in the summer.
Like a vampire, the blood retreats from the surface levels of our skin.
Motion is another factor. Rhythmic movements like running or cycling give better results compared to irregular movements like tennis or boxing. Okay, so when I box, I won't wear my Apple Watch. That seems like a good plan.
Just gotta box regularly.
Boom, 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 boom. Yeah. Boom, 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 boom.
Round three.
See, I'm a bit worried with the fitness tracking for me because during the working day, I actually use my treadmill. So I have a treadmill desk. And I've always found with the up band, with all the other fitness band I've tried, because if I wear it on my wrist, it doesn't actually reflect the number of steps because I'm actually typing at the same time. So I'm hoping it's going to work slightly better, but I'm not 100% sure it's going to be completely accurate.
Apparently, it is better at, Renee, you were saying this, better at, a lot of the pedometers out there really are walking, running, and that's it.
Yes. Yeah, and if you watch that video again from ABC where they took him into the lab, you see that they did extensive modeling on a fitness equipment, and there's rowing machines and stationary bikes and treadmills and all of those things, and they're using every sensor they have, not just the stair climber or the step counter to try and model what you're actually doing.
That's what it says here. It says heart rate is just one of the many factors the Apple Watch uses to measure your activity and exercise. Depending on your workout, it selects, let me make it a little bit bigger so you can see this on the screen. It selects the most appropriate inputs for that activity. When you're running indoors, it also uses the accelerometer. When you're cycling outdoors, it uses the GPS on your iPhone. Of course, the watch doesn't have GPS. So you'd have to have your iPhone for it to measure that.
Yeah.
And even when you're not in a dedicated workout, it tracks how much you move each day. That's that neat little thing, the half moon thing. So Apple Watch can give you information and motivation to improve your fitness health. Actually, for that reason alone, I'm very interested in it. I love the idea that I could see, you spend a lot of time sitting, get up. I like that.
Yeah. And it'll also measure and it's trying to encourage you. So it doesn't want you to fail. So it'll adjust downwards if you're having a bad week and adjust upwards again if you're having a good week. And it looks motivationally very sound.
It also, and I didn't know this, I hadn't seen this before, it will work with Bluetooth chest straps. Mm-hmm. So many of us use like the Polar watch or the Polar chest straps. It will support that as well. So that's good
I think
news.
That I do think that at some point, I mean, this is really the beginning of this, but I think we're going to see a much more tight integration between exercise equipment and a variety of other things with things like the watch. I think the watch is going to, you know, I'm surprised we didn't see it as much with the phones, but I think that, you know, I think the watch is just perfect to be able to, I mean, I think eventually you're going to walk up to your you know, lat pull down, and it's going to know what you did last time, how many reps, and it's going to tell you how many, you know, what weight to put it on, and what, you know, and all of that's going to be going back and forth between the machine and the watch.
I think the opportunities here are great, but we've seen that before with Apple, and critical mass is critical. Getting enough people using it so that makers of equipment will say, oh, we should support the watch.
Yeah, I don't know if this for sure, but there was a rumor that there was only going to be like maybe 100 or 200 apps available at launch, the ones that Apple had, you know, spent a lot of time with the developers on. But given how they've been doing everything and all the stuff that we've been seeing, it looks like there's going to be thousands of apps available. Not everyone is going to want all those apps, of course, but there's a higher likelihood that you'll find those one or two or three apps that really make a huge deal to you.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of critical mass is part of this, because we saw with the App Store and iPhone 3G, when that happened, all of a sudden it was Super Monkey Ball for one person. It was a Facebook phone for somebody else. Twitter phone for somebody else, right. And it really did change how you wanted to use, how sticky that phone became.
Apple's learned a little bit from Jawbone, which had to recall some of its bands because of nickel sensitivity. I was not sensitized to this issue, but it's a significant issue, and it means a lot of people cannot wear anything on their skin that has a significant nickel. Apple has been very careful about that. They have a whole page dedicated to that as well on the support page. Thousands of material composition tests, more than 1,000 prototypes worn for trial studies, hundreds of toxicological assessments, consultations with board-certified dermatologists. So if you have allergies or sensitivities, it does say the Apple Watch, space gray Apple Watch Sport, stainless steel portions of some watch bands, and the magnets in the watch and bands do contain nickel, but they all fall below the strict nickel restrictions set by the European REACH regulation. So you will have some nickel exposure, but the possibility of nickel-related reactions is very low. And then methacrylates, the Apple Watch case, the Milanese loop, the modern buckle, and the leather loop contain trace amounts of methacrylates from adhesives. Band-Aids have them. Some people have sensitivities. They do warn people. These parts are not in direct contact with your skin, but it is a potential cause of discomfort. They also say, don't wear your watch too tight. And also care and cleaning. Do not put your watch in the wash. But you could clean it with a cloth that comes with it, a lint-free cloth comes with it. Just as it does with the laptops.
Just not an orange one.
Apple Watch is water resistant. You may dampen the cloth with clean water. They're not saying Windex, so don't. Maybe Apple Watch is splash and water resistant, not waterproof. You can wear and use it during exercise in the rain and while washing your hands. Do not submerge it. The rating, for those who are curious, IPX7. And if you're wearing a leather band, that's probably not a good idea to get that wet. I love leather bands, but, you know, just from my own sweat, they get kind of funky pretty quick. So that's why I got the Milanese loop.
Yeah.
Nice and choice. The magnet that means it fits, you know, exactly right no matter what.
Yeah. It's the stretch pants of watch bands, Leo.
It is. It's the Lululemon, baby. I got yoga pants on my wrist.
Yes. Oh, they should use that slogan.
It's yoga pants for your wrist.
Your wrist is just happy.
All right. I have now, I believe, depleted all possible Apple Watch stories. You agree, guys?
We can talk.
There was one I saw today. I saw another story today about returns for the edition.
That returns?
They're going to have a really strict. Yeah, they're going to have a really strict policy, and they're going to, if you take an edition back to the Apple Store to return it, they're going to examine it with microscopes. They're going to weigh it so to make sure none of the gold has been extracted from inside the case, so that, you know. So that was the only other thing
I thought. Because there are bad people out there who will take the watch, shave some gold off of it, and bring it back.
Bring it back. Do that 10 times. You know, for
do that 100 times.
Messed up. More likely, I think much more likely, the people who would borrow it, basically, so they could wear it at a soiree. And I think that's what Beyonce did. And then bring it back. Pretty sure Beyonce did that. No, just kidding. All right. We haven't, CR1 says, wait a minute, guys, you can't stop. We haven't talked about the box it comes in yet.
Oh, no.
So I'm hoping that we'll have something to unbox on Friday. I hope Apple, I mean, I can't say that it lives up to its promise because they said all they promised was April 24th through May 8th.
Fingers crossed, Leo.
I have really got my fingers and toes crossed. Of course, it's so sad. It's a pathetic statement about me and our society. 3 days after it comes, they'll be saying, what's next?
Yep.
Now what?
True.
What else am I waiting for? Our show today brought to you by our friends at SmartThings. You don't have to wait to smarten your home. SmartThings makes it easy. And this is actually, I feel like this was, sometimes I talk about, flying cars or smartwatches. But really, to me, the future began when you could actually make your home a smart home without becoming, being an ultra geek. And I've tried for years to do this. SmartThings solved it. In fact, this was a Kickstarter project that was very exciting. The idea was, instead of having a different app for your lights, your music, your locks, for everything that you've got in your house, one app on your iPhone or Android device talks to the SmartThings hub, and then the SmartThings hub talks to everything else. And they've really done a marvelous job, not only of supporting most of the other products in the market, but of making their own devices like the Smart Power Outlet, the Smart Sense Motion. So this could turn on your lights when you arrive home. Or if you're not home and there's motion, you could say what's going on in there. SmartThings also has home security kits, including cameras, so you can look inside. The Smart Sense, what else do we have here? There's moisture sensors. This is kind of cool. This is the traditional open and closed window sensor, the two-piece sensor. But it also, while it's doing that, measures the temperature. So you can know when windows or doors or cabinets are open, but it also can tell you what temperature it is. The presence sensor, this is a little dongle you can put in your keys, or better yet, put in your kids' backpack so you know when your kids get home or when they leave home. Just some really cool stuff. So these are the SmartThings devices, the SmartThings hub. And if you go to smartthings.com/twit, you could take a look at their home security and solution kits. They start at $189. And we're going to get you 10% off plus free shipping in the U.S. if you use the offer code TWIT. This thing, I'm just so thrilled to see this. Every year I would go to CES and look at the Home Automation Pavilion and be disappointed. Because it was a Tower of Babel. SmartThings cuts through all that. And I guess that kind of explains why they won the CES 2015 Editor's Choice Award. This is a great product that solves a real need. I want you to try it for water detection, energy savings, security, home automation. There's nothing better. And it works with everything else. SmartThings, you can see actually on the website, smartthings.com/twit. You can see there what devices it works with. Make sure it'll work with yours, smartthings.com/twit. And don't forget to use the offer code TWIT when you buy any home security or solution kit. You'll get 10% off and free shipping. It's just smart. Smartthings.com/twit. We love it. I think this is interesting. Samsung's been sourcing the chips for the iPhone and iPad now for some time. We'd heard rumors that Apple was looking at another foundry. In fact, according to Apple Insider, has made a sudden last-minute decision to source 30% of the next generation A9 chips from this second foundry. TSMC. 30%
That's
of
the one that made the A8.
They did make the A8.
Yeah.
So do I have Samsung chips in my phone or?
Right now, if you have an iPhone 6, you have TSMC chips.
Oh, interesting.
But there was some reports that, because Samsung has limited capacity, like any fab, they don't have an abundance of capacity, that because they're busy fabbing all the Exynos chipsets, that Apple might need to hedge and have a second supplier for.
Yeah, their Galaxy Edge uses Exynos. They've always used in their Galaxy phones Exynos in Europe and Asia, but the U.S. has always had Qualcomm chips. This is for the first time ever the Edge has an Exynos chip globally.
Although it still has the Qualcomm baseband for Verizon. Yeah, for Verizon compatibility.
For Verizon, for CDMA.
And that wonderful little sticker that they're forced to put on the Verizon version.
Oh, really?
There's a powered by Qualcomm. It's like an Intel Inside sticker for Qualcomm on the bottom of the Verizon version.
Jason, you just got the S6 Normal. I have the Edge.
Yeah, I'm loving it. It's a pretty fantastic phone.
Now, we should say Jason's the enemy. He works for All About Android.
The enemy. Come on.
He's a frenemy at best.
Frenemy. Okay.
Adversary.
Friendly adversary.
So the question I have, and maybe Jason can answer, I was using one for 2 days earlier last week, and I turned it sideways, and none of the ports are aligned, and I can't unsee that. Like the SIM card thing is not aligned with the buttons. It's like the mic knob is not, the mic hole is not aligned with the micro USB port.
Oh, you're just weird.
I look at these things and I'm like, how hard is that to do? Just do that for me, please.
Wait a minute. You want to? Oh, look at it. Are they aligned? So you're saying, because here on this beautiful Apple iPhone, everything is
let's see here,
like rigidly aligned, but you're saying on.
Camera's pulled out.
Now that you've told me this, I probably won't be able to unsee it.
Okay, so that's the iPhone. They're all in line.
They're all in a straight line. Same thing here. I mean,
I guess so. I guess I never noticed it before. But zooming in, you can
kind of
see.
Oh, now I'm not going to be able to unsee it. I hate you.
Above.
Not a reason to reject the phone, but you're making excellent points.
I'd like them to do it.
The infrared sensor is above.
Yeah, that's exactly what is – Apple is like obsessive, like OCD obsessive really about stuff.
Yeah.
And
I guess I didn't look at the alignment of the different ports.
Well, now we have to
Renee,
look.
Thanks.
Thank you, Renee.
When the next one – when the Galaxy S7 is perfectly aligned, they can thank Mac Break Weekly.
That is pretty funny.
The camera. I just have to say the camera. Finally, I use an Android phone, and I'm amazed by the
camera. It's the first really good Android camera.
It's taken 5 years of Android devices for me to finally be super impressed by a camera.
Excellent review at AnandTech. Very thorough review at AnandTech. And he did say that he still considers the iPhone camera marginally better, probably because it's only 8 megapixels. He does point out that on the Edge, when you have a 16-megapixel camera with a sensor that size, that means the pixels on the sensor are about a micron, which is pretty darn small.
Mm. They chop them up really small to get the megapixels.
And so, you know, maybe he's a little over, like you, a little over-involved in the stats. But,
well, I don't, so for me, a camera on a phone should just be like most people, most of the time, should be able to pull it out of their pocket and with absolutely no adjustment, take a photograph.
And the Edge does that.
A good memory.
I mean,
the
S6 does that. Yeah.
And that to me is the only criterion.
And I use a highly subjective criterion for pictures that I call pleasingness.
Yes.
Because I admittedly, sometimes a picture that's not perfectly accurate is more pleasing than a picture that is perfectly accurate. In fact, often.
And some people like warmer, some people like cooler. Yeah. It's very personal sometimes.
And I've always thought the iPhone, particularly the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus even more so, had a very high pleasingness factor. I mean, you looked at the image and you liked them. You said, yeah, that's what I saw. That's
Alex
how it felt.
He thinks we're animals right now. He thinks we're absolute animals right now.
Who does?
Alex.
You animal, you!
No, I shoot 95% of my photos with my iPhone.
Yeah.
I mean, I really take my DSLR out very, very rarely. I mean, I take it out for very specific things. And sometimes, you know, a couple times a year, I capture things with my kids that I want in that format. But really the thing that I shoot almost exclusively is my iPhone. You know, it's the thing that's in my pocket, my DSLR, and even Micro Four Thirds, I tried to go to that. There is so little room in my case, you know, my bags when I travel, that anything more than about that size is a problem for me. And so I've gotten quite used to it, and I've gotten pretty good at taking those photos. But that and my little 360 Beta or whatever are pretty much the only cameras that I have most of the time.
It's amazing now and in fact, I think in many ways your smartphone is primary function is your camera.
At least I think another big area, though,
people use it statistically. It is the primary function of your camera. Of your phone is a camera. And I think that one of the things that, you know, the integration, like my kids love the fact that my Apple TV is connected to my photo stream. So I'm just like constantly taking photos, and they love that they come home and they see wherever I was.
That's awesome.
You know, they're just things just appearing all the time. You know. Of whatever I'm doing, they stay connected, and I think that's actually a piece of what I like about it. I think with DSLRs, then I have to figure out where to put it and do all this other stuff. With this, it's just online. It's on my computer. It's on everything I need it to be on. I don't have to think about it.
What were you saying,
Apple,
Don?
Just bought Lynx.
No, I was going to say exactly the same thing. The photos are great and the images are fine, but the convenience of the connectivity that they have, and also geolocation. I mean, if you think back a couple of years, how hard it was to actually do geolocation and put that information on your photos.
You know, when we were in China,
it's just done.
I was carrying with me. John and I went to China on one of the geek cruises. And I was carrying a GPS dongle with
me. A little dongle. That's right. I had one as well.
And you'd have to – and, I mean, it was just crazy. And then you'd get home and you'd use a tool. I think it was from Huda that would
– Yep, Huda Geo.
Huda Geo would take the KML file from the GPS dongle and match it because you had to have the time right. And then it would match them. And then they were geolocated. And now it's just geolocated.
I noticed with photos because, I mean, I've started to use a little mirrorless camera as well, which is great for travel. And that's nice images, but, you know, there's no geolocation on there. And with the new photos, you can't actually get that information in photos. You have to use something like Huda Geo to actually put the geolocation information on. And it's such a pain
in the butt.
Mm.
Well, and I think I love the iPhoto map or the photo map. You know, and where the fact, you know, I have to admit, sometimes I fall a little behind. I didn't realize I could just search by location, you know, and until a couple of weeks ago. And I was like, oh, my gosh.
Do we have, does the new photos do that? Or is it?
Yep.
They didn't?
Yep.
Okay, good.
And so you can sit there and go, and go, I just want to show you all the pictures from Rwanda. Or if I'm looking for pictures from my house, I just go to those. And that map is this great map of... For me, it's this great memory trip of all these different places that I've, you know, traveled. And I love the fact that everything's just getting tagged and everything else, except when I post it and I worry about.
We've all replaced, if you've updated iOS to 8.3 and you've updated Yosemite to 10.10.3, bye-bye iPhoto. Hello, photos. Mm-hmm. And we've been talking a lot about that, but now it's real for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
What do we think?
I mean, I love it. I love it, especially with iCloud Photo Library, because it really does deliver on that like nearline storage promise where all my frequently accessed favorites and recent photos are available on every single one of my devices. My less frequently, unfavorite photos are just stored up in the cloud and I can get them with a tap of an iCloud button. And it means that I don't have to worry. My entire library is available everywhere. I do download one copy. Like I have one Mac. My iMac downloads everything and backs it up to Time Machine just in case Apple's servers ever explode. But it's working great for me. I've been using it for 2 or 3 months now. And we put up, I think, 50 help articles, 3 guides, and a bunch of reviews. And it's just been really good.
People have been complaining that the iCloud Photo Library sync never completes.
It takes a while, especially with a big library.
It does take a while.
Yeah. And do you recommend when you're on a phone, you're going to have optimized the iPhone storage because then it downloads... It doesn't download the full originals of everything. It does some very smart stuff so that you don't fill up your iPhone with photos, but you get access to all your photos. Do you recommend that on the Mac as well?
With a small SSD drive, absolutely, like a MacBook Air or one of the new MacBooks.
Yeah,
because those will fill up really quick. They do a really good job of stopping before you get completely full on your drive, but with the optimized storage, oftentimes you don't need, especially all the raw information all available all the time. So it'll just leave that in the cloud until you want it. And if you want to make sure that certain photos are highly available, just open them before you go out or favorite them or do something that prompts the system. Think of it like a Fusion drive. Whatever you do more frequently is going to end up right there on the computer for you.
By the way, there's somebody in the chat room saying, no, Photos doesn't do maps. It isn't obvious. There's not, in the new photos, you have photos, shared, albums, and projects tabs. But if you're in the photos tab, you'll see that they are geolocated. And if you click the geolocation of any given group, it will launch a map.
Mm-hmm.
And that map you can move around in, right, and see where other photos are and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, I've been playing a lot with photos this week because that's actually the topic of this week's show. So,
oh, good.
I'm very, very, very intimated with it at the minute. But no, I like it. I mean, there are some of the advanced tools that aren't there in Aperture. And I don't think that the majority of people are really going to miss them. If you're really heavily into photography and you like using the brushes, et cetera, you know, it's going to be difficult
get Lightroom.
For you. But
just get Lightroom.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to do that, get Lightroom. But yeah. But again, my take on photos is it is still a version one product. As Rene says, the iCloud photo library just is the answer to all my prayers of workflow, because I used to get in such a mess before with having the iPad and the iPhone, and you know, you'd edit something on one device and then that edited version would remain on there, and then, you know, it was a complete mess. But with iCloud photo library, you know, things do sync eventually when you give it time if you've got a big library, and it's just such a delight to, you know, edit something on your iPad and then literally within seconds, you know, it's actually on your Mac or it's on your iPhone as well, the edited version. Right. Plus it's non-destructive, so you can, if you want to revert, you can revert as well. But I think that, you know, it's a version one product. They're going down the same route that they did with Final Cut. They're going down the same route that they did with Pages and Numbers, in that they've basically started again from scratch, and they've built the architecture underneath, and they've produced this first version. They haven't opened any of the APIs yet, so that there's no plugins on the Mac, etc. But I'm sure that's to come, and I'm sure we'll see lots of these more advanced features in Aperture that we had reappear within Photos for those people who want to use it. But as a version one product, it's probably more than suitable for, you know, over 80% of people who like to play with photos.
I hadn't yet installed, turned it on, because I just upgraded this laptop to 10.10.3, and it's so cool because as soon as you turn on iCloud Photo Library, all these images from, you know, way back when are now available to me. I mean, here's pictures from our visit to London in the fall in October.
And you get a ton of space back on your device.
Yeah.
A lot of people were running out of space. The thing to Don's point is there's no photo extensions for OS X yet. Those are only iOS, but it's not hard to imagine that that's next on the list for OS X. And, you know, there's a new version of Lightroom that's available today. And, you know, there's a lot of features for photographers. But for somebody who just wants to manage all their stuff and not have to worry about it, the feature set, it's complete-ish. It's mm-hmm. There's not everything here, but there's a lot of stuff you can do.
Yeah. It's not all completely discoverable like that Maps thing. It takes a little time to kind of move around within it. It also does video, which is nice. I think this is a good middle ground, and the iCloud photo library. Have you heard of syncing issues, or is it just that people have so many images?
I had a problem today, and someone asked, because I put out a thing on Twitter asking people what would they like for me to cover, and someone did mention syncing, and people are finding they are having gaps in the cache, you know, so that when you see the thumbnails, they're like sort of spaces sometimes that don't completely fill
it's
in.
It's a little image with a cloud in it, but no image itself.
Yeah.
Well, I see a few of these.
Actually, if you drill down, normally you see at the top level, you'll see blanks.
Yeah.
But normally when you drill down to that level, if you give it a few minutes, it normally, and that looks like that's actually an error. That's probably a video that's not supported.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen quite a few of these, however. There's something. But I just started syncing when we started talking about it. So I'm pretty impressed at the range of stuff that's already been downloaded.
One of the really cool things is that there's PhotoKit, which developers can plug into. So, for example, Google updated Snapseed last week, and I love Snapseed, and they use PhotoKit. So that fits right into the non-destructive editing pipeline. So anything you do with Snapseed now gets preserved in Photos. You can go back and undo it. And if more apps start doing that, then it becomes really sort of exciting because you don't just have plugins, but you have plugins that are non-destructive, that sync, that do all that as well.
I'd love that, yeah.
Yeah, the other thing that people are a little bit concerned about is having to pay for the cloud storage, because obviously if you're just using a free 5 gig account, it's not going to sort of hold a lot of photos. So they've got tiers that you can boost the storage. But, you know, if you don't want that, they have given you a sort of get out as well, in that you can have multiple Photos libraries, and because it's only the one library on your Mac that will actually synchronize with iCloud Photo Library, so you can assign one library to sync and then have other libraries, you know, for archive, or if it's just stuff that you don't want to sync between your devices, you can hold that in separate libraries as well.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so you can do it. It's a bit difficult to move photos from one library to another at the moment.
Okay.
But, you know, you can keep them in separate libraries and then just switch. Use the old trick of hold down the Alt or Option key when you load photos, and that will allow you to select
the
library.
That's very good to know. So if you're going to import stuff that you don't want to put on iCloud, for instance, you could do that. Hold down the Alt key when you launch photos and say, create a new one, and you'll have now.
Or if you've got you know, if you've got a huge aperture library like I did, my aperture library contained hundreds of 4K video clips, which, you know, are huge in size. And I don't really, I'm going to use them to edit and make a, you know, a smaller movie. So I didn't really want all those clips to be uploaded. So I basically, before I migrated my aperture library, just exported all those 4K clips into, you know, a separate partition, deleted them from the aperture library, and then just migrated my aperture library. And it was a lot smaller by the time I'd done that, you know. So there are ways you can massage and manipulate what actually does get uploaded to iCloud Photo.
Jason Snell writes an article a couple of weeks ago in sixcolors.com about an experience that was a little odd. Now, he has 20,000 photos in a family photo collection. And it started upload. He says, later that day, I discovered something. The next day, my internet connection seemed to die, or at least become sporadically inert. Traffic would sometimes squirt through, but after long delays, it was weird and intermittent, and I was really sad, as I would be as well. Later that day, I discovered something, though. Even though iPhotos wasn't open, a background task was uploading my photo library to iCloud, all 20,000 photos. This process was using all available bandwidth. It was not what we call nice. Saturating my outbound internet connection, which means your downloads will also be throttled. If you're trying out photos and wondering why your internet is suddenly slow, now you know. You can pause for one day. That's a button right there in the settings for iCloud Photo Library. Are you aware of this, Renee? Have you seen this?
Yeah, there was a big debate about whether it was uploading in the background or not. And Jason was showing, you know, screenshots of network activity to prove that it really was. Mm. And again, like this is,
even if Photos is closed.
Yeah, you have to pause it. Yeah, it's a daemon or an agent. I forget the technical term.
The thing is, though, that button, although it says pause for a day, you can actually just pause it and it turns into a resume button. So if you just want to pause it for a couple of hours, you can press that. And then, you know, if you're working during the day, just press that and then leave it on overnight and just press resume.
I presume once it's done, it'll be, you know, done.
Yeah.
But that's bad programming. It should be, you know, when you have Backblaze or Carbonite, our sponsor, people like that.
Even iTunes.
They'll be careful about using your upstream.
I'll give you the option to toggle it, you know, or to a slider to, you know, change the amount of bandwidth. Get her done.
Yeah.
And you have to be very careful if you accidentally have a MiFi that it accidentally connects to it.
If you had a bandwidth cap, you should be aware.
Or no, you want a bandwidth cap. What you don't want is to have a limit where you're then paying $10 a gig out.
Right.
Just in case you're wondering, it adds up over time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is actually a problem a lot of programs have, and something new with this cloud storage thing. But just good to be aware of.
It still amazes me that Apple have always suffered with a bad press on cloud and web, and justly so. You know, in the early days with Mobile Me, etc. But they really do seem to have got their act together now. When you consider the amount of data that you know, pushing down or pulling up. When you look at the music, look at the movies with iTunes, you look at all the apps for the Mac and for iOS, and now the iCloud Photo Library. You know, the sheer volume of traffic they must be handling now is, it's open to the public. It's not just a beta, so anyone now can upload, you know, 200 gigs of data. I mean, that's where I'm pushing up at the minute. I've converted my aperture library. It's about 250 gig. I only started it 2 days ago, and I've been switching it off during the day while I work and just leaving it on. And about halfway. It's probably about a third of the way through, but it's getting up there, you know.
And there's no way to say don't put this album on the cloud. You just have to create a new library.
Yeah, it's everything within a library goes. It's called your system photo library. That's the one that actually gets syncs with iCloud Photo Library. Mm.
It's meant to be sort of set it and forget it. It's made so that you can take the humans out of photo management. They want to do it all intelligently for you.
Which is great if what it does is what you want it to do.
Yes.
But as you get more sophisticated, maybe it isn't. It's like Time Machine and a lot of other.
Yeah, it's things. Exactly like that.
Yeah, Apple always errs on the side of, you know, it's just magic. Sometimes magic can be black magic for those who.
Well, and sometimes they, as the needs. Time goes on, like now they've added to Time Machine where you can prevent it from backing up certain folders, and I wouldn't be surprised if that stuff slowly begins to appear in photos over time.
And I think they presume correctly in most cases. That if you're that sophisticated, you know, you just disable it and you'll do your own thing. Yep. You'll know what to do.
It's really Lightroom.
Yeah, you'll use or whatever. You'll exactly. So this is for people who don't know better and will be in 99% of the case just happy The problem is I wish they would document a little bit better so that we, the more sophisticated users, could say, oh, I don't want that. I prefer not to have that. On the other hand, I'm loving the fact that even though I'm using this machine for the first time with Yosemite 10.10.3, I got all my pictures on here. That's nice. Yeah. Without clogging my hard drive.
It's even more amazing on your phone. You just pull out your phone and that picture from 2007. Isn't that you want great? To show the grandparents all of a sudden is right there. Yeah.
What do we know what the algorithms are for how many originals to put on there, how many thumbnails, you know?
They explained it. And I'm going to forget. I'm not going to get it right. But basically, they see how much storage space you have left. And if you have optimized storage on, what it'll do is upload the originals and replace them with sizes that are optimized for the screen of the device that you're using. And then any photo that you've taken recently, that you've opened recently, or that you've favorited will get priority for caching locally. Anything that's old or you haven't looked at in a long time will be prioritized for cloud storage. So it is basically a nearline algorithm.
I think that's a really good way to do it.
Yeah.
Very nice. All right, let's see what else is going on in the world of...
We skipped over. Apple bought the camera company Lynx.
Yeah, what is that for? What are they going to do with them? Is it L-Y-N-X?
L-I-N capital X.
L-I. It's an imaging company from Israel. What does Lynx do?
This is marketing hype, but they say they want to make iPhone cameras as good as DSLR cameras, and they're using a bunch of 3D imaging technology to sort of super sample and get depth information and other information to try to boost the quality of small camera technology.
They have multiple sensors, in some cases as many as 4 sensors in a single camera.
And this is very similar. I mean, this is a similar technology to Lytro. It's a similar technology to what Samsung or what HTC has done with the M8 and M9. The idea is with a little bit of parallax, you can get a lot of information about how far things are away, and then you can start selectively grabbing things and creating short depth of field. There is all kinds of things you can do with these lenses. I mean, that is the simplest of the things that you can do once you're gathering that information. So there's, and I do think that this is going to be the future. Right now, we're seeing a handful of cameras with this. I wouldn't be surprised if most cameras had this in 10 years, some version of this.
This is the press release from Lynx before they got bought. Apple bought, only paid $20 million. It's cheap.
Yeah. John Gruber rumored this,
get them early.
Yeah.
John Gruber had a rumor, I think, 6 months ago that Apple was doing this with their cameras. So well played, John.
Yeah. Or well leaked Apple, one or the other. It would make sense. The press release from last year and Lynx says the image quality of mobile cameras has reached a dead end. I think you're seeing this with the Edge, where you're putting 16 megapixels in, but they're sub-micron pixels. Device makers are striving to differentiate using imaging capabilities, but the pixel size race has ended, and the next generation cameras do not reveal any dramatic improvements. Lynx camera, it really is. It's about software, right now. But this is a hardware innovation that might make a big difference. Lynx cameras revolutionize mobile photography and broaden the usability span and user experience, allowing us to leave our SLRs at home. It uses the extra lenses to extract depth information, so you could do 3D image reconstruction. With depth sensitivity, you can do multiple variable focus as the Lytro does. Should be Apple smart. Apple needs to. Their ascendancy has for a long time been, and the iPhone has been partially powered by the strength of their camera. Mm-hmm. There's just nothing as good. And you got to stay ahead because people are starting to catch up now.
Neil Seibert had a great article on Above Avalon yesterday about the importance of the camera, because it's one of the features that people will upgrade early for. If you can prove the camera substantially better, then maybe 10% more people will upgrade that year. And that translates into a lot of money.
It's got to be in the 7, right? Not the 6S.
It's hard to tell. The 6S will have the same body, but they can do a lot with a camera even within the same body.
I'd be really surprised to see anything before 2016.
Because we don't know, because Apple, they can do whatever they want. But the last few generations, the second iteration of a new design has not modified the body, right? So you still would have this size camera hole. Or could you make it a hole and change the motherboard significantly? Would that be an S?
They have so much money, Leo.
I know. They can do anything they want.
I mean, they could make the bump a little bigger, couldn't they? Because they've already started to educate us with having a prominence on the outside. So they could actually, stick that up by another millimeter or two.
The S6 has quite a bump,
actually.
The 5S had Touch ID. I mean, they swapped, they added Touch ID, which is a hardware feature to the 5S.
You're right. That's a new device. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
I think that the issue is, I think they're probably in the landing phase of manufacturing already. I mean, if they're, you know,
oh my God, can you believe that?
Yeah, I mean,
of course they are.
For the next version,
of course
but for something in the fall, they're going to need, they're going to know that they need, and they'll know down to the million of what they need.
Right.
But they probably have 10 or 15 million that need to be produced minimum. I think there's a huge surge in the 6 and 6S. The 6 and 6 Plus. I'm not sure that the surge will be quite the same, you know, for the 6S, just because there was a lot of pent-up demand.
Kudos to Apple buying up 36,000 acres of forest in partnership with a conservation fund. Apple does use a little bit of paper. The land, which is in Maine and North Carolina, it's land roughly twice the size of Manhattan. Part of a 45 million acre private forest in the U.S. that is in danger of being lost due to development. So Apple acquired these and will harvest pulp from these forests for its virgin paper needs. Probably for the boxes. I'm sure those are made from virgin paper. But done properly, wood is a renewable resource. And instead of clear-cutting this forest and putting housing complexes up, the trees will stay. They'll harvest them. If you think about it, when you sell hundreds of millions of devices every year, each in its own perfectly crafted square box, you got a lot of non-recycled fiber. They say it about one-third of the paper packaging of the iOS devices is non-recycled fiber.
And I think Apple gets pinched a lot on whether, you know, the environmental impact of what they're doing. So I think that I think this is probably just the beginning. This is a small step in the process of them taking more control over their supply chain. It feels like they're almost getting to a point where they could. I mean, they have the cash to do it if they wanted to build almost a vertical market where they're literally pulling the I mean, completely vertical, where they're literally pulling the content out of the ground. And this trees is the beginning of this, but it could be, rare earth metals, all kinds of other things, where they're actually owning a big chunk of that and managing it the way they want to manage it, and then having it all, you know, own it all the way to the end.
Maybe they'll start making the boxes out of wood. What do they need to be paper for? Make them out of wood. You got the wood.
There you go.
Apple's got wood. Now 36,000 acres of wood. I like wooden boxes. We got our Heil mics came in wooden boxes for a long time.
Yeah.
You're making something of that kind of quality. Does the edition come in a fine? It comes in.
It's got a very fancy box.
Yeah. Is it cardboard?
I don't know. I didn't ask what it was made out of. Yeah. But it looks very fancy.
Yeah. Fancy box. But anyway, there is a precedent for this. Remember Henry Ford when he built the Rouge factory, which still runs in Dearborn, Michigan. The whole idea was that you put boxcars of trees and ingots of iron in on one end, and a car comes out the other end, because they have forges and they have mills and they have everything you need in the Rouge factory, which is a massive factory.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if you look at, I mean, what's now disbanded, I mean, we think of them as coffee makers, but Krupps really owned everything. From the they were right. Krupp's Arms, and they owned everything from the mining organizations that pulled it out of the ground,
yep,
all the way to the finished guns that they outputted.
If you're big enough, it's the way to do it. All right, let's wrap up with a few things. We did mention the LA Unified School District's purchase of a large number of iPads, one for each student in the district. They issued a 30-year bond to pay for it, which seemed on the face of it bad fiscal policy. The program was an incredible flop. They're being investigated because the no longer, but at the time, superintendent there had ties to Apple and Pearson, which is the publishing company that made the curriculum to go on these iPads. They bought the curriculum sight unseen. There's complaints now it never worked, and Apple is now saying, LA Unified School District is now saying to Apple, we want our money back. We want our money back.
I think this is a real clear, when you think about Pearson and you think about putting the content onto iPads, this is a classic case of new wine in old wineskins. I mean, you know, the issue is that it is a you know, they have this old technology being books, and I get that they try to spruce it up with making a couple things interactive, but really, you know, for this kind of thing to work for most of these school systems, like to really build your entire curriculum around it, it's going to require a complete rethinking of the education process, and I don't think most public schools are ready for that.
$1.3 billion in iPads. It failed almost immediately. It was rolled out in fall 2013. The devices didn't work. Teachers weren't well trained. They often would put the devices aside. I think the motivation was good, which is there are a lot of poor kids in our district who do not have access to technology, and we want to make sure that they have access to technology, whether an iPad is exactly the right thing.
I think the teachers didn't jump on it. The teachers didn't take much advantage of it. I think there was a lot of other problems. But if you look at, like, the Baltimore School District actually put smart boards in every single classroom that they had, and almost, you know, all but like one or two of the teachers just used it as a blackboard. They just didn't understand it, and there just wasn't enough training, enough for them to see why they should do more work to figure that out.
Yeah. Well, it's really as much Pearson's problem as it is Apple's, but the school district said, we're not paying for any more iPads. Thank you very much, and we'd like our money back. It feels like they probably aren't going to have much success with that approach.
It's going around snatching iPads from kids' hands.
Take me that iPad.
Bah, humbug.
The YouTube app has disappeared from older Apple TV and iOS devices. Wasn't it replaced by a newer, better app? YouTube is apparently changing its data API, and many of those older apps just won't function. If you have an old second generation or earlier Apple TV, the YouTube channel just won't be gone. Yep. iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch, iOS 7 or later is required for YouTube to work. So that's not an Apple thing. That's a Google thing. They've changed the API. Although Apple, I guess, is responsible for the YouTube app on the Apple TV, at least.
It's a channel partnership. So, like, if it's the same as Bloomberg, then they get a kit that lets them develop the app that then gets put on the...
I see.
I think on the other devices that you can still get to YouTube through mobile Safari, it's just the... it's the Apple TV.
Browser
the,
works.
The one that's going to be...
Right, yeah. But there's no browser on the Apple TV. 10.10.4, seated developers, get ready. Woo.
Yep, and 8.4.
Woo. What did 8.3 do? What did I get when I got it last week? What did I get?
So 8.2 was all the watch stuff. 8.3 takes all the stuff that Apple's iOS engineers have been working on and mixes that with the watch stuff and gives you, like, it's basically the next version of iOS. The other one was the same as iOS 8.1, but with the watch stuff. Now you're getting the next version of iOS that combines the watch stuff into it. And you also got the emoji, like the diversified emoji with all the flags and extra things like that. And then iOS 8.4 has been seeded, and according to some websites who've published pictures of it, there's a new music app.
Huh. That would be the Beats.
There's no Beats yet, but it's a redesigned music app so far.
Oh. Which might
be the front end for things.
Front end for something we don't even know what they're going to call. Yeah. You did mention briefly, we should probably mention Lightroom 6 came out today from Adobe. Have you played with it, Alex? Do you know anything about it?
I have not. Okay. I'll ask more from my sister. I'm going to play with it. I'm still figuring out what I'm going to do post Aperture. So I'm definitely looking at it. My sister uses Lightroom heavily, so yeah. I'm going to let her give me some guidance.
I think they introduced facial recognition and some new HDR features, and also some stitching of panoramic shots, including stitching of raw photos and panoramas as well.
Also, fully 64-bit in all versions. If you're a Creative Cloud subscriber, as I am, which is, by the way, one of the best deals out there, $10 a month gives you Photoshop and Lightroom and automatically updates to the next version every time. You should be getting that or getting a notice to get that. Face recognition, I don't care so much about. Mm. Speed improvements, new tools and brushes. I guess the faces is kind of like Apple Faces, which is in Photos and iPhoto and Aperture. High dynamic range tool. I've been using an external tool called Photomatix to do HDR. I guess I should try Lightrooms now. So if you have Lightroom upgrade, there'll probably be a paid upgrade for Lightroom 5 users on the standalone version. We'll take a break. Come back. Gentlemen, prepare your picks. Our show today brought to you by Lynda.com. Hey, hearty congratulations to Lynda and the team. They just sold Lynda.com for $1 billion to LinkedIn. That's great news for those of us who use Lynda, because that means now they're going to even get better and better new workshops, new classes. 3,000 on-demand video courses already on the site. If you are a problem solver, if you just like, you know, you want to make your brain bigger, you love learning. We all love learning. I think humans in their natural state are learning machines. Lynda.com is a great thing. You can learn how to create an app, how to build a responsive website. You better too, by the way. Google's now penalizing you if you're not. Master Excel, sharpen your coding skills. Lynda.com has everything you need to feed that curious mind of yours. We talk about photography a lot. The foundations of photography and the Photography 101 series are great. Lisa's taking those right now. Ben Long's teaching one of them, who I love. There's Ben right there. He is just not only a sweet guy, a great photographer, and a great teacher. And this is what's every single course on Lynda.com is by working professional, but who is a great teacher. And then they give this, they have their beautiful studios. They shoot them marvelously. You get text transcripts so you can jump right to a particular part. And then once you get the basics out of the way, and this has been teaching macro photography, which is awfully cool, you cover composition, exposure, all the basics. Then you can get the advanced tutorials on shooting portraits, landscapes, street photography, travel, time lapses, macro photography. Something for all experience levels. Go right now to lynda.com/macbreak and sign up for your 10-day free trial. You get 10 days, the run of the place, and all the new courses will be yours. For Burt Monroy's amazing Photoshop courses, they're so good. It's just the greatest stuff ever. Lightroom, Photoshop, photography, web design, programming, it's all there. And you've got it all to yourself free for 10 days. But all you have to do is go to lynda.com/macbreak. We thank them so much for doing such a great product. Congratulate them on their new I'm just so happy for Lynda. 15 years old that it's a startup, 15-year-old startup. I love that. I just love it. Lynda.com. Well done, Lynda. Time for picks of the week. Let's start with Renee Ritchie.
So we're going to be inundated with Apple Watch apps starting Friday, and I wanted to get in ahead of the crowd. Twitterific is the granddaddy of Twitter apps. It's where a lot of the iconography we know, like the bird came from Twitterific, tweet came from Twitterific. It symbolizes so much of what we now consider to be Twitter, and they were there in Jailbreak. They were there the first day of the App Store, first day of the iPad App Store. I'm convinced if an Apple TV SDK comes out, they would already be working on Twitterific for that. So it's hard to be surprised that they have Twitterific already ready to go for the Apple Watch. They put up a little teaser blog site about it, and you know, as is to be expected from the Icon Factory, it looks gorgeous. You can have the little mascot Ollie right there on your wrist. And it's, for me, one of the biggest things about the Apple Watch is going to be notification triage. I have very few notifications on, almost none of them can actually make my phone sound at all. I do DMs on Twitter. I don't do very much else, but being able to just quickly glance at something and see a short look and bring it closer and see a long look and know if it's important and if I need to stop and take care of it is going to be really important. And there's the Twitter app, but more and more often, it feels like Twitter's interests aren't my interests, and sort of the decisions they're making with interface and with features aren't the decisions that I want from Twitter. But Twitterific has always been just exactly what I've wanted, a classic Twitter client. And you can get the update now. It won't work until you get your Apple Watch, of course, but it's already baked in and it's going to be ready to go.
Love the Icon Factory. They do such great stuff.
They're terrific.
Beautiful, beautiful stuff. Oh, I can't wait. And I can use Siri to send a tweet using that, right?
It'll probably use the built-in Twitter functionality of iOS. It won't.
Oh, okay.
But you don't need it to, because all you're doing is sending a tweet. It's going to be a system function at that point.
Yeah. Can't wait. Twitterific. I use a Tweetbot.
I do too on the iPhone, because it reminds me of Tweety, which is just how my brain works when it comes to Twitter.
Me too. Tweety, the original.
And Tweety was bought by Twitter. Right. Lauren Brichter made it, and then they basically destroyed it and made the new Twitter app. And yeah. Tweetbot just reminds me of that. But I've always used Twitterific on the iPad because they have a combined timeline, so it's a very enjoyable reading experience.
I gotta do it. Okay, so for Twitterific for the iPad,
yeah.
Tweetbot for the iPhone, and we'll see for the iWatch, the Apple Watch, yeah. which is the best. I presume
there's no Tweetbot for Apple Watch yet.
Not yet, but I presume everybody's got to be working on that, right? It can't be too hard to do, or is it?
So the notifications are almost for free. Basically, any notification you currently have now will just work on the watch. You can add some fine-grained controls, I believe, if you want to. Then you can also make a glance, which is like a widget, and you can also make a WatchKit extension, which gives you interactivity. And that's what Twitterific has done. Tweetbot and the other clients would have to make those glances and widgets as well.
I imagine everybody's got to be doing it.
Some people want to wait. They want to see it. They want to take their time and see what interest. Because the hardest thing so far has been figuring out what makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ben Bajaran said this. You have hours on the computer. You have minutes on the phone. And you have seconds on the watch. Because people just don't want to leave their wrist up for a long period of time.
Right.
So figuring out what the most important functionality is and giving that takes a little bit of thought. And I know several really good developers who want to wait and have a watch for a week or a month before they figure out what they want to do with it.
Mr. Don McAllister, Screencasts Online, your recommendation.
Right. Well, I've gotten with a gadget this time rather than an application.
It's
something that came in really handy on holiday recently. And it's this. This is the, and it's, you need to see this on video, but it's the Feotech handheld gimbal for your GoPro. And it just basically stabilizes your GoPro and turns it into a Steadicam so that you can be walking along. There's no footsteps, nothing bounces up and down. You can actually do smooth pans. I was riding on the back of an elephant, and it produced fantastically stable footage.
Wait a minute, slow down. I was riding on the back of an elephant. Don't just skim by that there.
Yeah, well, I did that India trip with our geek friends.
Fun.
One of the things was an Indian safari, and of course, you're bouncing up and down.
Yeah.
But with this on, it's just absolutely fantastic. It's just a stick.
It's not huge, yeah.
It's tiny and it's very portable, very lightweight, but you can, you know, no matter what motion you go, you can actually stabilize it. And it's sort of got three different modes as well. So you can actually, if I just hold down the button, it actually stay in perfect location in 3D
Isn't
space.
That cool?
But it's just really a great gadget. Now this is the G3. They've actually come out with the G4 since, which has got these wires that are hidden, and you can also charge a GoPro from the batteries built into the handset. But when I was at NAB last week, there's actually more coming out now. You can actually get these now for smartphones. So there's a couple now. I don't think they're on the market yet, but I did see a couple of prototypes of these similar things that you can just put an Android or an iPhone onto it, and that turns your iPhone into a Steadicam.
I bought a crazy gimbal, the Nebula 4000,
mm-hmm.
for my Sony A7 camera, so for my SLR.
Oh, right, yeah.
But it's a pain in the butt to use because you have to balance everything carefully before you can use it. And when we were out shooting our show open for the new Screensavers, launching May 2nd on some of these same networks, we had Greg Freeman, our shooter, had a beautiful professional kind of Steadicam gimbal system. This is a very popular system now. But he had a special person to balance the gimbal. Do you have to balance your gimbal?
No, not this particular one, because it is actually designed for the GoPro. If I actually just switch it off, it sort of just goes limp when you switch it off, and then you just switch it on. So basically, it goes into a rucksack. If I wanted to use it, I just pull it out of my rucksack.
Nice.
There's a button on the bottom. You just press the button, then within a few seconds, it snaps into action, and you're ready to go.
And it's a lot less money than my Nebula 4000, I got to tell you.
I can well imagine. Yeah,
$250 bucks US for that.
Right, okay, yeah. A bit more expensive over here in the UK.
Yeah.
And I have one. I actually bought exactly the same one.
You like that one? approved.
And I very much approve it. It is an amazing little bit. I shot a shot of my kids running across the back of our yard, and I'm running full tilt behind them with that GoPro. And it's just like we're floating. It's just like I'm floating behind them. It was quite amazing. You know, there's just no vibration. It was quite an experience for me to experiment with.
Again, I want one for my smartphone because it would double as a selfie stick. Right?
Yes.
So did you say they make one, or they're going to make one?
No, there are some 3D, not the same company. There are a couple of different Japanese and Chinese companies, NAB, but there are some with just a smartphone holder. I think you do have to balance that to set it up.
Yeah.
This particular one is
for the GoPro. Look at this Nebula 4000. The thing, it takes me an hour. I want to recommend it, but I have to get good at balancing the dang thing.
All right.
It's crazy. Crazy. And it's also like $800. Crazy. So what do you do, Alex? You guys probably have a real steady cam.
We have a couple different things. So we have a Steadicam, and my brother Joe is now a Steadicam operator. So
is this the same technology, gimbal technology, or is it different?
Well, no. So Steadicam is doesn't have any of the gimbal stuff, but you can add them together. So for instance, I have a Ronin. It's probably what your DP was using for the thing. And so it's a Ronin. It's got two handles.
Yeah.
You put a red or a big camera in the center.
It.
So I have.
Yep.
And what that is that a lot of all this gimbal technology really came from drones, because all the drones, they were building all these gimbal systems for the cameras, and then they realized, you know, it'd be really good if we just held on to these, you know. And so
well, that's in fact what makes the Ronin is DJI.
Right. Yeah. So I have a Ronin with a red camera that I use. Then I have the little one for the GoPro. Those are great for getting those smooth shots. You don't you have some control, but you don't have the artistic control that you'd have with a Steadicam, which is a much more manual process. It's balancing the camera, but it's really like how it turns and everything else. It steadies it, but you really have control. So if you're doing a really like a film level control shot, one of these does not, in my opinion, replace a good Steadicam operator. But most of us are bad Steadicam operators. Right. And so as a result, this is really good for that. Up to about 80% of what you would use a Steadicam for, these will do that. Once you get over that, you really need someone who's got years of experience. What you have passed, I mean, we did our first shows. We bought the Steadicam, took a lesson, and we're shooting with it. You know, and this would have been better. Yeah. You know, like this would have been a better solution for us for the kind of shots we were doing. So if you want to have that artistic control, you need to have a lot of experience or hire someone with a lot of experience. If you want just steady shots of your kids, if you want steady shots for your short film, walking behind people, those are all things that are great. You can, again, also add these together. Some people are adding these gimbals to the Steadicam. So you have some of the control and then this ultra, you know, it's an entirely different feel. So there's a lot of interesting creative things you can do. Because these are so stabilized, you can literally have one person hand the rig to another person. So you could be following someone, they get into a car, you hand the rig to the person in the car, and it follows along with them all in one single shot.
What you did was what Greg did, which he has this thing which goes straps onto his waist and has a string that, can you see my screen, that comes over the top and holds the Ronin.
Yeah. Well, in a lot of ways that's a stress reliever,
you right know, so that, it's just because that's a long time he's got to hold that thing, so this helps him hold it. Yeah.
Exactly. A lot of those kinds of rigs do give it a little bit more a little more control, but it also these rigs get really heavy. You know, I know that my brothers can get up to, you know, 70 or 80 pounds of gear.
We used a Steadicam up in Canada for the lab with Leo, as you know. And the operator, man, the guy was wearing it for 4 hours at a time, and man, that must have been just exhausting.
It's a process, and they really have to pace themselves where they're shooting, and then you set it down for a minute, or you throw it over your back. But you'll see that the good ones will get very good at how they manage their time, because you really can only go, most of them can only go 15 or 20 minutes at that very outer edge, and really only creatively for the first 5 or 10 minutes.
But this is kind of cool. I like the Ronin. That's pretty amazing. I didn't realize DJI made him.
Yeah, well, again, they're taking the technology that was working for their drones and just applied it to something handheld.
And, of course, the drone technology is basically a specialization of the Segway technology. So it was kind of appropriate that we use the Ronin camera to shoot the screensavers open in which we are riding Segways. By the way, we decided to buy two of these, Alex. So the next time you're around, I want to get you on a Segway.
I so want
Greg's shooting this. When we come down, you'll see it most when we come down Lombard Street, the crookedest street in the world. He's standing there with the Ronin on, and he's using the Canon Cinema cameras, those great cameras.
C300, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really. There we go. See? Yeah, C3. He's on that, and it's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. You're going to be part of this, right, Alex? You have to come back.
Yes.
Wouldn't be the screensavers without you.
I can't wait. It's so awesome.
You can ride my Segway. May 2nd, we're doing them Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. And that's the new screensavers with many of the old screensavers part of it. In fact, our first show will feature Patrick Norton as my co-host. So, Alex, what do you got for us?
So I have a longtime Pixcore member and a friend and just a really talented teacher. Tony Farley is he put out a book, and I just love every once in a while I see a good someone starting to use iBooks and expanding on it and so on and so forth. And so he has a book called Arduino Programming Circuits and Physics.
Love it.
And so basically, if you want to learn how to start working with an Arduino, it really starts with plug the USB in, and really how to get started on pushing programs to the Arduino circuits. And then and what's interesting about it is it's not just a how-to. Like for instance, he gets into voltage and there's in LEDs, but he gets into voltage and there's animations and they're talking about.
Is this it, Tony Farley?
Yeah, that's it.
Awesome.
And he's got 3D rendering that he did, or some of his students. He teaches at San Leandro High School, and just a really, really talented educator. And it's 99 cents.
I can't believe
that it's 99 cents with video. And then he's already said at the beginning that he's going to keep on updating it. So it's just, it's kind of like this living, book that he's going to keep on adding. So if you have, and that's the great thing about iBooks. And the way it's set up is he can just update it and he said he's going to update it for free and just keep on kind of jumping into it. But there's a lot of, the stuff's very clear. There's little step-by-steps. You'll see some of those being like 1, 2, 3 with little examples. There's videos in it. It's an amazing value for 99 cents. So, and really just a great book either way. I have a couple Arduino books cause I've been playing with it and this is one of the clearest ones that I've seen.
Would this be appropriate really for home use,
Oh yeah. It's designed for both teachers. I mean, because there's workbooks and there's little things at the end that you can go through to make sure you understand it. But you could definitely use this if you wanted to get started with, working with Arduino. And
if you had a kid who was so inclined, what a great way to do some hands-on stuff.
Well, and I've been kind of hacking around with it, and what I actually want to do is do it with my kids, and so we kind of go through each one of these very systematically and talk about the stuff so that they can kind of get their head around it. I've been, of course, playing with the little bits and Mindstorms, but I think it's time to start, really playing with something a little more serious. And so so I think that it's a great little book, and it's definitely worth supporting him and also getting to getting started with Arduino. If it's something you've been trying to figure out how you're going to get started, it's $55 for the ultimate collection on Amazon. So if you want to learn how to do this, it costs nothing, and then you get this book for 99 cents and you start wiring away, and you can be the geek that you always wanted to be.
physicsibook.com is Tony Farley's site, and it'll give you links so you can buy this. It's on the iBook store only, 99 cents. Tony Farley, Arduino Programming Circuits and Physics at physicsibook.com.
And he's got other books up there, too. And he's a prolific iBook developer.
Yeah, and it's all about physics and stuff, which is, hey, who doesn't love that?
Exactly.
I should have put this on an iPad to show you. This is a game that I don't know how I found it, but now that I found it, I can't stop playing it. It's called Hook. And it's a puzzle game, iPhone or iPad, and it starts out very simple. If you played Bleck, remember how much we loved Bleck? Mm-hmm. This is like, let me turn it up. It says wear headphones. It's really the sound's not that important. It's one of those games where there's no explanation at all. You just kind of learn by doing. And it's at first very simple. You're solving puzzles. There are certain rules you will learn. And as you solve it, but it gets deeper and deeper and deeper. The idea is to clear the screen by pressing the buttons. And if stuff is intertwined, for instance, if I press this button, it won't be able to withdraw the line because this one's in the way. And it'll say, nope, got to start over. Which, by the way, if you've done a lot of clearing and then the later levels you will have, starting over is a punishment. Wrong button. Got to press this button, then that button. This looks really easy, doesn't it? Get to level 40, then tell me how easy it is. And it won't take you too long to get to level 40. These are just basically tutorial levels. It is, I think it's $1. It's not expensive, and it is totally addictive. I showed Lisa last night, and she she literally went to 40 or 42, stayed up way late. It's one of those games you play and you go, oh, I'm going to stay up late and solve this one. It's a lot of fun. Hook. Just, you know, a little, everybody should have a little, there you go. How much is it? 99. Just a little puzzle. Everybody should have a little puzzle game. It's got a good soundtrack. You could almost do this on an iWatch. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Mac Break Weekly. Thank you, Don McAllister. Great to see you, my friend.
No, thanks for having me
on. Sorry, I missed you in Vegas, man.
Oh, never mind. Never mind. Next time.
What? Any big? You're the big traveler. You were riding an elephant in India. Last time I saw you, we were on the Great Wall of China. Are you going anywhere cool soon?
There's an event that's actually just been published or promoted today. Just a Mac sort of gathering, really. Thing called what's it called? It's like a Mac festival. What's it? MacStock.
MacStock. Like, I like the name.
Like Woodstock, but MacStock. Yeah. It's in Chicago. It's just a day's conference and like a barbecue thing afterwards. But a lot of people who used to go to Macworld are going to that. So I'll be going to that in June, and then to Canada in September. Going for a holiday to Canada.
Come visit us.
Canada?
We're close to Canada. Just hang a left at Vancouver. You'll get there.
Okay. Oh,
really? MacStock is actually in Woodstock, but not Woodstock, New York. Woodstock, Illinois.
Ah, right.
And Allison Sheridan's writing about it, too. It's MacStock Conference and Expo.com, and it's in June.
Yeah, well, I think it was put together because Macworld had finished.
Yeah,
there's an awful big social group of people who really haven't got anywhere to hang out anymore. So I think this has been put on to let us all the small community of really fervent Mac people to actually go along and hang out. So there are going to be lots of Mac podcasters there. There'll be some sessions, and I think there'll be some food as well. But should be good.
Sounds fun. And, of course, everybody should go to screencastonline.com, and that's where you're going to see Don's working hard on his new photos screencast.
Yes, it's going to be a two-part. So I'll be covering the setup this week and then looking at the app next week, and also the iOS side of things as well, because I still do the Mac and the iOS stuff as well. So
nice.
It's all there. It's all there.
It's the place to be, screencastonline.com. Don's on Twitter at Don McAllister.
That's the one.
ReneeRichieEyeMore.com, and you've got a whole bunch of articles on photos, too. And I have to say I highly recommend them because there's some hidden stuff in photos. It's not obvious.
And we're adding stuff all the time. I think we added two more yesterday.
Yeah. Good. EyeMore.com. And, of course, you know that he does some great podcasts there as well, like the Debug podcast. So if you go to EyeMore, you'll find it all. There. It's great to see you again, Renee. Thank you.
Might have a ton of Apple Watch stuff landing on Friday.
You might.
No spoilers.
You might. You've got a keyword for Apple Watch. You already have a lot of stuff. Who's going to be your Apple Watch point person on this? Serenity?
Myself and Serenity, yeah, and Allie. I mean, we're a small team. We're four people, so we kind of...
The whole team?
We're four people, so we kind of all just do everything. Peter does most of the Mac stuff. Serenity is going to do a little bit more watch stuff. Allie does the how-to stuff, but it overlaps so much.
I had no idea it was such a small team. You guys crank out so much great stuff.
Ooh. There's a newsroom. We don't have to do news. The news is taken care of by our network.
I get it. And then there's Team Eyemore right here. And don't forget Georgia.
Yep.
Team Eyemore. Renee, Serenity, Allie, Peter, and Georgia. I like it.
We're all still smiling there because the watch hasn't landed yet.
Let the writing begin. Thank you so much. Great to see you again. And to Alex Lindsay, pixelcore.com at Alex, LINDSAY on the Twitter.
And we've got Final Cut, the virtual user groups coming back a week from Friday. A week from Friday. So it takes me a little bit of time here to get my head around what date I'm in. But May 1st, and I'll announce more information on Twitter, I will be bringing in all the usual suspects and talking about the new Final Cut in great detail. So it should be a lot of fun.
Fantastic. Folks, we do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC, and we love it if you watch live because you can talk in the chat room, and it's a great way for us to feel like we're, you know, involved. You can also visit live. We do ask you email us if you plan to be in our studio. We loved having you. Just email tickets at twit.tv so we can put out a chair for you. And of course, if you can't be here live or watch live, you can always get on-demand audio and video after the fact. That's twit.tv/MBW for MacBreak Weekly. twit.tv/MBW or search iTunes or your favorite podcast client or on mobile. We're everywhere on mobile. And that's also, I know for most people, the easiest way to do it. We have great apps, too, thanks to our third-party developers. Just search for Twit in your mobile store, TWIT. Thanks, gentlemen. Thank you all for being here. Now you get back to work because you know what? Break time is over.